guy says, oh no, it's working just fine. No, it doesn't. Hi, Mikey. Is this a forum now with you and you and Mary Ann? That's a forum of the F and A Commission. And a forum of the town. And there's the mayor. So it's Dan and Ben we're looking for. Is that Dan, Ben, and Ben? I know nothing. You're fine. It's four. There's Ben, so that's good. So, do you know if Dan's coming, honey?
He's certainly coming, but maybe a little later.
So we might as well start. I'll call the meeting to order, y'all. Is there a motion to approve the 3/3/2020 minutes? Is there a second? Okay, I'll second it. Is there a discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
I don't have staying because I wasn't.
Okay.
You hear that?
Record reflect that we have. Did you vote yes? No.
I can't hear you up here.
Did you vote yes?
I don't know what we're voting on.
We're just, it's the F&A committee, so it's Tom, okay. Marianne, Barb, and Mike.
Got it.
It was just to approve the minutes. Aren't you? Okay.
Yeah.
Selection of an F&A vice chair. Could you do that, Mike?
Yes.
I'll make that motion then to have Mike. Is there a second? A second?
Oh, second.
Discussion?
I got your storm minutes.
Just make it minutes over. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Did you do the citizen committee last time?
Yes, I did.
Everybody okay with Mike doing that this time too? I'll make that motion. You want to take the two citizens committee? Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, citizen of the year recognition. Who wants to take that?
I will. This is informational and directional both. As you know, Mark Leach was named our Citizen of the Year, and traditionally we had a reception the last meeting in March. We were unable to do that. We were also unable to have the council reception at the installation because of COVID-related concerns. I have talked to Mark, and he is absolutely content waiting indefinitely, you know, until we can have a reception. I wanted to get your input, your direction, if you wanted to do something different. It's not a decision I should make, but I wanted to bring it before the committee and see what everyone's thoughts were, how they want to proceed relative to the 2020 Citizen of the Year, Mark Leach, and the recognition that he is deserved of.
Now, we put this in the newsletter.
Yes, ma'am.
That we announced it.
And press release.
Yes, and it's the mayor announced it, city council. Where did the mayor? There he is. And, I mean, it's been announced. But you're right. He should have a hoo-ha like everybody else, except we're not getting together to hoo-ha anything. But he's okay with the status quo here like it is.
Yes, ma'am.
So, maybe we should just leave. And it's... This falls under this committee. This is where this goes.
Right.
Lack of where else. Does anybody have any ideas? I mean, we just want to leave it alone if he's okay with it. The people that nominated him, I think that was Mike Kane who nominated him in the Historical Commission, they would probably want to come to something like that. And they're in the at-risk group. And so I wouldn't think we'd want to expose them to an in-person. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Ben actually has hand up.
Oh, I'm so sorry, sir.
I was just gonna, just a thought, and I don't know if it's a good idea or a bad idea, but it just concerns us. Could we do something outside of a normal council meeting like we usually do to give them that type of ceremony? I mean, even something outdoors or something? for it. We were going to, because we never really, we never gave Mr. Leach that recognition.
We didn't give him the rah-rah, the in-person rah-rah.
Right, so I mean, is there a chance we could do that sooner or later?
What do you think?
That was basically my idea. What if we did sort of just a smaller scale meet and greet type of thing? Maybe no refreshments under the circumstances, but for those council members that could make it just for the recognition, whatever our attendee list is in terms of number of people. I don't know if it's 10 or 30 or what the number is today, but some sort of a small meet and greet to at least give him some kind of recognition for his achievement.
You know, if we didn't, and we couldn't do like a buffet like we've done, but we could do box lunches. I don't want to cheat him out of eating, you know, but we could serve box, sort of Jimmy John's.
Well, we can do any of those things. I just, and maybe we're there, maybe we're not. I just hate to diminish the award by having a sparse ceremony.
Well, what's your pleasure then? What do you think, y'all? Hi, Dan. Dan's here, everybody. We're talking about Mark Leach, and we're talking about a ceremony or some kind for him or recognition that we weren't able to do. Go ahead.
I guess I think that's the right concern, and to have this whole time where it's better to wait and do the whole thing that he deserves than to slide him in any way because of whatever the services are doing. I guess my own concern is I think we're getting to a point where we might end up hitting that anyway because we have the next Citizen of the Year process coming up. And I imagine we'll be back more or less to regular operation by the time that recognition will come up the market, we hope. But if that's the case, what's going to be the tempting thing to do then is to do a double type of, a double Citizen of the Year thing for him and the other person. I feel like that kind of, it takes away from both of them at that point.
It does.
When they're sharing the honor. So I mean, we're running out of days in the year to give him his own ceremony and do it before the next Citizens of the Year thing. So I want to wait and make sure he doesn't slide.
Run out of nice weather.
If we do it outside, it'll make it a special thing. Honestly, it's his whole thing is an outside on-site thing. I mean, maybe there's a way we can really, you know, take advantage of the opportunity to do it outside. I don't know if we can work with the Barrett Academy there and do a tour of his work over there at the mound or something like that. But there's ways we could maybe find something that's different in the outdoors, but it's still gonna make it feel like, you know, we're trading some of the rah-rah, as we call it, for other types of things that are maybe even more special and justified and specific to his particular activity that's led to his award.
You know, Marianne, this is your committee that you're the liaison to. What do you think?
I think we ought to wait. I think it would be nice to do something now.
Turn the volume up, honey.
I agree with Mike. I think it would be diminishing it for him. And the question is, when do we pick the next one? Is that spring? Is that a March thing?
The nominations will come in late December, early January, and they'll pick it in by spring, yes.
So I'm wondering if we should not even do it for next year. And just, you know, until we can honor Mark properly. I don't think we ought to double up on at all. I don't think that's gonna be accurate been on that. But I know Mark, I talked to Mike Kane about this, and Mark is fine waiting. I think he's okay either way, but it would be nice to have his family there and those of us that can come, you know, to come back.
Let me ask you this, sir. You don't know, we don't know that you're having, or maybe you do know that you're having the employee appreciation thing, the Christmas thing in that.
Correct, we don't know at this point.
That could almost be our target, because that's the employee, that's everybody comes to that, doesn't it? Could we do it?
It's a lot of people.
Is it too many people? I mean, it's a lot of
people. That's a great opportunity. At least we'll have a reasonably sized audience, if we have it.
We should know
that sooner than later.
And that's always been a buffet too, so you don't even know if you can do that.
Yeah, that's actually a full meal, not just like
that. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I don't know. What's your pleasure, y'all? That would be the four of us. What do you think, Tom? You haven't weighed in on this.
Oh, this way.
Think so?
Yeah.
And wait until what Sam Page says,
So we can have...
Live your life normal now, or what?
Yeah, so we can have...
Turn up the volume.
So we can have a reception, in-person reception.
And you're saying wait. What do you say, honey?
I'm okay with waiting. I think that the idea of combining it with the city Christmas party isn't a bad idea, although it diminishes a little bit because there's not a lot of service awards that are part of that, recognitions and things like that. So it could take away from the focus being
the specialness of this
on Mr. Leach. Yeah.
Well, I guess why don't we play it by ear? Wait for now. And let's play it by ear, and there might be an opportunity. What do you think of that? I didn't mind the outdoor thing myself.
No, I think it's fine as long. The only thing I think that would really bother me is if we're doubling up on the ceremony. I think I didn't even consider the fact that we always do it in March, but Councilmember Mastorakis is right. We always have the option of delaying the second one to make sure Mr. Leach just goes first. We don't have to do it in March every year just because that's what we have the time frame we're usually looking at.
Okay.
It
was an interesting comment, Councilmember Mastorakis, whether or not you're going to have one for next year. This has been a strange year, and I'm sure there'll be nominees, but I don't know how much community outreach there's actually been this year.
You know, or maybe there have been amazing community outreach that we don't know about. COVID's taken so much away from everybody, I wouldn't want to take this to. So, well, I think we've reached consensus that we'll just put the pause button here until somebody comes up with a better idea. What do you think of that? And
that's
we do it Christmas, and or we do, you know, some other, I don't know. That's kind of where we are. Let's just say that's where we put that thing. This proposed city council meeting schedule, you guys have all seen that in the packet. Are you guys good with that?
Yes.
Motion to approve. We're sending this on to council is what this is, right, sir?
Yes, there is a notable change.
Yes, there is.
That's this year. First off, as you know, the criteria moved from a standard Monday is City Clerk Vicki McGowan contacts the Jewish community and there are certain dates where they have holy days that they cannot conduct business. We exclude those and we generally move those meetings. When they're physical meetings, we move them to Wednesday. The calendar, you know, obviously it is unknown when we will change back to physical meetings, but if it's virtual, I'm assuming we can do those on Tuesday, the next day, but if they're physical, they'll be the Wednesday. So that's the difference on the calendar. There's a little bit of flex there.
And that'd be Wednesday if they're physical because of the court here.
Yeah, you can't do it on Tuesday in City Hall because we have court those days.
If there is going to be in-person court. All right, is there a motion to approve this? Send it on to council.
Moved.
Yep, second? Yep. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no? Okay, there you go. Recommended for franchise tax audits. This came up several months ago. I can't remember how it came up, but it's a great idea.
So you might recall at the last F&A meeting, we were discussing utility tax revenues and the decreasing trend that we have seen over the last few years. The F&A committee asked staff to review various vendors that would perform audits on those revenues to make sure that the city is actually receiving all of the revenues that we are entitled to. So we identified two vendors, Azavar and TriStem. Azavar is out of Chicago and TriStem is from Dallas. And looked at them. Both of them are comparable in their comprehensive review, looking at the various options specific to this. We were talking about the franchise tax and the utility tax revenues, and they went ahead and provided some proposals. Azavar has asked for a 37% contingency fee, but not only on the historical review part, but for the next 36 months in the future. TriStem has said it's 40%, so a higher contingency percentage, but only on the historical revenues. So staff has reviewed this and is recommending to the committee that we would consider going forward with a contract with TriStem to review the franchise tax revenues and see if we could get some additional revenues back into the city. Once they've identified those, we should be able to receive those moving forward, not just the historical. And then we can do future audits depending upon the results of that.
talk about the franchise tax, what it is and what we're looking for here.
So we are looking for, specific to the utility tax revenues, they would be asking for our agreements with them, what those tax rates are, what our actual city limits are. They would go to the utility companies, they would actually ask for their list, they would cross-reference to make sure that we are not missing any of the people that should be coming back to the city.
Yeah. You had some anecdotal, you want to share that?
As an example of the things they find, now we found this internally, but it was just by chance, because we wouldn't have the ability to do it as part of an audit. But I communicated with my peer in the city of Ellisville, and Ward 1 knows that the city of St. Louis water plant is, you know, north of Kendall Bluffs and that yeah. area there. Obviously, they, you know, it's a river water treatment plant. They consume a lot of electric, a lot of pumps, and a lot, you know, so a lot of consumption there. Well, come to find out, the Ameren had been sending the revenues from the city water plant to the city of Ellisville. Ooh. Now, we corrected that, and in fact, we required that they reimburse us for those lost revenues from the prior years, and we recovered all that. But that's a substantial amount. It was over $100,000. So those sorts of things are the sort of things that a utility tax audit would catch.
Did that come out of Ellisville's hide or Ameren's hide?
Ellisville had to reimburse us, but Ameren then corrected their accounting so that we would get it from that point.
But Ellisville had to give us $100,000 thereabouts.
Yes.
Dang. And so this, and how did we find this?
It was by accident. I was communicating with Bill Schwer, the city administrator in Ellisville, and we randomly discovered it.
And he admitted to it, well, this is hard.
Yeah, he was having more recovering it all at one time. We were able to spread that over 3 years. But we got it back.
How long ago was that?
4 years ago.
Okay. No, this is great. I mean, even if it's 40%, we'll get 60% of right something that right now we have none. So that sounds good. Sir?
Make the motion to proceed with price down before the franchise audits.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion.
I just want to ask Jeanette, so you're happy with the references, the letter references?
Yes.
I see them in here.
Yes, especially when they said that they would highly recommend them and they've used them more than once. So they've been repeat business, so they've had good success.
And so do they do this all online, or they come here, or how does this work?
Well, especially under the current circumstances, yeah. they would not be coming here. But yes, if we did not have these current circumstances, they would come here typically for only one day. They would get the information they need. They would go work remotely. They would proceed to contact the utility companies on their own and then be in touch with us.
And then how long is it, what time frame do we have to have them do their work?
So their actual work would take them about 60 days and they would have the answer. But they are reliant on utility companies to provide them with information, so it can be delayed as a result of that.
And has the city done this before?
Yes, not with utilities, but we've done it with cell phone billing and plant, and we recovered about $8,000.
It's $8,000 we didn't have.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, that's wonderful. And is there any other is there any other areas of the city that we want to do that? And are the utility companies typically forthcoming with their materials for these kinds of people?
So they have been historically.
So far, so good.
It's just sometimes the timing of when they will get the information.
Okay. And do they recover it for us, or we have to go get them?
They recover it for us.
And bring us a check. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And, well, this is great. So, any further discussion? Let's hire them. Let's go. All in favor, signify by saying
aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay, here we go. Muni League dues. Now, they discounted them by 10%.
They did discount them by 10%. As you are aware, it is a budgeted expenditure. We budgeted at $7,200. But council has also directed us to get the blessing of the FNA committee before we actually pay the invoice.
Okay, now, they have been a leader in trying to get this $47 million, have they, Mr. Moore? And Mr. Mayor, I'm addressing you because you deal more with them than anybody in Mr. Geisel. But they've been trying to get that $47 million distributed per capita, and they are allegedly successful.
They've been very active. We're able to get, information that I think is useful, from them from time to time. It's no secret that, with the overall environment and different things that are going on within St. Louis County and the city, I wish there'd be a stronger voice on occasion, but
sometimes they whip out.
As you mentioned to me the other day, I think it's worth having a seat, a voice at the table.
And you've always said that to the voice at the table.
Well, I've said that. It was particularly important last time when this came around, because there have been some things that it's not just been that they've been wimpy on or been doubted or refused to speak up on or haven't spoken with the as much voice as they can carry. It's that there are some things that they've been adverse to us on.
They have.
And I think that the pool was before Better Together, the big thing that we were left on our own dangling out of the wind on was the tax pool. It was Chesterfield against the world at that point. At least that's what it felt like. The municipal league wasn't there. So on the heels of that, it felt it was a lot more difficult to vote to get induced. But then Better Together came and gave us a reason to have that voice at the table. I guess I want to know going forward that is 2021 going to be a year where they're going to be on our side and a big thing that comes up, or is it going to be one of the years where they're not there for us, or they're just quietly off to the side on one of our battles? I assume the 2021 big fight is probably going to be the Wayfair and the use taxes and stuff like that. I assume the municipal league would be on the, I think I know where they would be on that, but.
Councilmember Keithley, I would say, why don't you just call them up and ask them? I mean, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but you weren't here in all those things, those years that you were talking about, and I suspect you really don't know what you're talking about. So,
we're all here to learn, Mayor.
Well, I know, but for people to say things that they don't really know what they're talking about is not helpful.
But
that's what I'm doing. I'm responding.
We don't know.
But I think the nature of the question, are they going to be supportive of Wayfair? Absolutely. You, as a matter of fact, I recall you yourself, Councilmember Keithley, were in the halls of Jefferson City with Jeff Brooks, our lobbyist, and I believe Pat Kelly was standing there, and we're working out the language that would have gone in the Wayfair legislation had that occurred. So for you to sit there and ask a question like that is a little bit disingenuous.
I don't recall any talking about Wayfair.
You forgot when you were in Jefferson City, standing there walking down the hall with Jeff Brooks and myself?
I think it's a fair question to ask the question.
I think it's a rhetoric question.
If we're going to pay dues to an organization and be a part of it, do they have our best interest? That's the question.
I tried to tell you beforehand, I think it's a mixed bag, but I think overall it's worth having a seat at the table. Period.
I think it's a mixed bag. Yeah.
Make a motion to approve the recommendation.
Is there a second? Is there a second? Okay. A little bit more discussion. A concern was when Pat Kelly he was trying to figure out a job for the freeholders to do. That's still in flux and crazy, but he had mentioned that maybe the freeholders could work on crime in the city of St. Louis, which I don't know how that got to be their mission and what has got to do with any of us, but which is odd.
Well, yeah, there are things, and, you know, so Councilmember McGinnis is mentioning something that she and I were talking about here very recently, and, you know, this is all the more reason why participation in the Municipal League is not restricted to mayors. I've said this before, you know, if you're that concerned, get involved, attend the meetings, learn what's going on, and participate. So, you know, I can't do it all by myself.
Well, this is why we appreciate a mayor who's retired and most of the rest of us work.
Yeah. I can tell you that, you know, there's, you got the Missouri Municipal League, who has a pretty strong voice in Jefferson City. They look to the St. Louis Municipal League as representing St. Louis and St. Louis County. Okay. For better or worse. Clearly, there are issues with the structure of the St. Louis County Municipal League, the fact that they represent 88 municipalities of varying sizes, configuration. So you certainly take the good with the bad.
You're going to have competing interests.
Absolutely. But I will tell you, when it comes to influencing St. Louis County, or influencing the MML, or the state, you want them on your side as opposed to being against you. And it's a routine situation. I would say there's rarely a week goes by that the mayor or myself or city attorney at Greville aren't requesting information from them. They're a resource as well. I've got issues with them. I think we all do. But I would hate to get shut out at the same time.
We did that one year, remember? I think we did it for about 6 months because they were crapping all over us, and then we said, no,
we just delayed payment.
That was about 6 months.
We were always the member, though.
Yeah. Now, when is this, so what are the dues due?
They're due actually in June.
Is that right?
When they're invoiced.
All right, we ready to vote on this? We're just sending this to the council, yes, sir?
Last time this came up, I know I said I would vote for it, remember, because we're going to do better together.
Yes.
I said I'd make an exception, so I wanted to remain with the appearance that we're
inside the tent.
Yeah, I didn't want to look like we're going rogue or anything like that, but I don't believe they're our friends. I don't think they supported us in the tax pool.
I don't
think that they support us in our resolution to keep St. Louis City out of the county, which would be a disaster. I believe that they want St. Louis to be part of the county through a board of freeholders. I think that we...
As a corporate body, have they taken a position on having... Has that group taken a position on bringing the city of St. Louis into St. Louis County?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, I believe that they do want St. Louis City in the county through the board of freeholders. We were aligned with them through the whole Better Together fiasco that we dealt with until Steve Stanger.
They came up with the freeholder thing just so we could have a local vote.
That's why I voted for it, because I agree with that. That was the lesser of two evils.
We had no choice. They're both evil.
But to try to do this as a board of freeholders. But once Stanger imploded, we should have pulled back on the whole board of freeholders thing. That thing is still moving ahead, and that's still very dangerous.
They have till what, November? September? When do they have till to complete their work, according to...
There's a legal question. They were supposed to, as you know, City of St. Louis still has not appointed their freeholders. They're required to nominate them within 30 days. The board then has 1 year to complete their business. If I remember correctly, the creation of the board was last September, so it would be, October would be 1 year. But there are different legal interpretations of whether or not the 1 year starts after the 30 days or after they meet for their first time.
After they have a full complement of a board?
Correct.
Oh, whatever God's happens, sake. What is a year?
Well,
yeah.
Madam Chair,
yeah, sure.
The benefit that I keep hearing is we have a seat at the table, which that to me is a platitude. I would like to see more value built around it. I'd like to see a better value proposition sold to me and to the taxpayers to spend this money. So what does a seat at the table mean? We're not voting on things that are going to affect the policy of St. Louis County.
Especially if they're going to go rogue and just take stands that nobody says anything about to anybody.
They're against us more than they're for us. Or
do they ever take a poll of the membership, and if they're going to take a stand on something, do they take a poll of
the membership? They have votes, yes.
I will tell you, when we were working on the Wayfair in Jefferson City, the language that City Attorney Greville and Rob Clark developed, when we sent that up, the only way it got adopted was it had to get the blessing of the St. Louis Municipality.
Well,
and we lobbied them very hard.
Guess that's worth something.
What?
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, isn't that, I mean, we and I actually had, I think I had a meeting about some of that stuff when we get to the Armstrong Teasdale, and it's more about that one than the Jeff Brooks one, so, but I was going to wait on that, but if we have, I mean, part of what we engage Armstrong Teasdale and certainly Mr. Brooks and Jeff City for is to take those concerns for us. If the Municipal League is a body that has to okay what we're going to put forward to our representatives and what Chesterfield's position on something, that sounds like it's more of a blockade. Did I misunderstand something?
No,
yeah, that's not the way it works.
That's not, go ahead.
Jeff Brooks was advocating on our behalf, and he would take it to individual legislators, and the legislators would in turn say, I'm okay with this. What's
the
Municipal League say?
Okay.
But they need to know, are they accepting of this at the expense of a different...
They want to know they're not throwing the baby out of the bathwater.
Yeah, it's not that they are an intermediary. They could be a competing interest, and they want to know that up front.
I understand now. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What else you got, Tom?
No, I don't think they're our friends. I don't think a seat at the table. If we were a seat at the table and that we were lawmaking for St. Louis County, if we were affecting the, then I'd say, yeah, that's fine. But we're not. It's going there, and it's to, you know, you can express your opinion, you can talk to other mayors, that's fine. We can do that anyway. We can get information from other sources. You know, if we're that interested in what the mayor Brentwood thinks, we'll pick up a phone and call or email. But I don't think we need a seat at the table, ask the taxpayers to spend $6,400 when they're undermining us more than they're helping us.
Yes, ma'am.
So do we not, I mean, are we always a pub? Right? Is Chesterfield somewhere out there and the rest of the Muni League over there? It sounds...
Well, the tax pool issue...
It sounds like, you know, we're just here by ourselves fighting this. Is that what you're implying? Or is there a cohesiveness at all of kind of a coming together of philosophy? Well, a coming together of, besides a seat at the table... Do the cities work together enough that it would benefit us? We
can still work together with cities without being, you know, part of the meeting, paying $6,400 a year.
I think when there's an organization that puts it together, there's a formality of purpose that you don't get. Yeah, you call.
You don't get an individual
to them, you know, go have lunch, coffee, whatever. Yes. That's not the same. I don't think that's the same.
Our tax pool thing would have really...
Since Bob, maybe Bob is the one.
But our tax pool thing really scared the bejesus out of some cities in St. Louis County because they would have, you know...
What?
If we had won that,
oh.
They would have been scrambling. Okay? So that put us out here, you know. That put us out here because we decided to... Bit to the wind.
Here's one little thing. I mean, the resolution of the ordinance we just passed last night, the anticipated $3.2 million.
Yes.
You know, I'd say that likely might not have happened if had it not been the persistent effort over a prolonged period of time of Matt Kelly and the Municipal League. So $3.2 million is...
Up against 6,000.
I'm not convinced it wouldn't happen either.
Contrary to the recommendation of the County Council Oversight Committee, who wanted a completely different formula based on need and disproportionately directed to North County.
Exactly.
And it was only because of Municipal League. Now, our interests were aligned in this case. That's not always the case. But I can assure you that that $47 million would not have gone out on a per capita basis, if not for the Municipal League, which was by indirect response to Councilmember Mastrocas, influenced by the Lafayette Area Mayors Organization and West County Mayors, Metro Mayors, some of those. So there are a lot of competing smaller groups.
Okay, this is a recommendation of the council. We ready to vote? Four people here. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, I'm aye. Opposed say no.
No.
Okay, we have three ayes and one no. Okay, now we have Jeff Brooks, contract removal, renewal, Gamble and Schlemmer. This is our $40,000 a year guy. We have a presence in Jefferson City, which we don't have to just necessarily rely on the Muni League to do our dancing for us. We have a presence in Jefferson City. Do you want to speak to that, the two of you guys? Because you deal with him more than we ever do.
Yeah, I mean, between the mayor, City Attorney Greville, and probably to a little lesser degree me, we speak to Jeff all the time, and he does. He certainly advocates on our behalf, and frequently he calls us and said, do you want us to kill this? Do you not want us to kill it? There's certain things like that. But really the real benefit to us is there are hundreds of pieces of legislation that are introduced. And a lot of effort is wasted chasing these or opposing them, supporting them, giving input, doing your fiscal analysis on it. A lot of effort. You call Jeff, say, what's happening with this? He says, that's not going to see the light of day. Forget it.
So he's
you have no way of knowing that unless you're inside the Beltway. And it just saves us a ton of time.
And he can sort through all that and tell us what's right and what isn't and what stuff means to us. Not everything up there that they do has anything to do with us.
8 out of 10 pieces of legislation are filed and no expectation of ever getting the floor.
That HB 54, where the votes on better to get, you know.
Where he said it would never happen. Yeah.
Why was he right? But we still held out hope and worked really hard and lost. But yes, sir, what you got on Jeff Brooks?
I just say, you know, I mean, I don't call him all that often, but when I do call, he always takes my call or gets back with me quickly. And, you know, he's you know, he and his firm are highly respected in Jefferson City. One thing, you know, I'm thoroughly frustrated with Jefferson City. Including the most conservative ones that are holding up common sense legislation.
Yes.
But, you know, but I can't hold Jeff Brooks responsible for the legislatures in Jefferson City.
They're going to do what they do.
So.
Yes, sir.
I have been with Jeff Brooks in Jefferson City on a couple of
occasions.
He has personal rapport with many of the legislators there. I, too, like the idea of having a set of eyes and ears in Jefferson City, and I think he's done a good job of serving the city of Chesterfield well as our voice in Jefferson City. And I will make a motion to approve this expenditure.
Is there a second? I'll second it. Now, and he is proactive. He contacts you when a stink's going to happen or something's going to affect us away. You don't have to chase after him.
Yeah,
I know he said this before.
Okay, you'll get a call at 8 or 9 o'clock at night or on the weekend. He'll say, this procedural issue is going to happen.
And it's important to you.
And it's important to you. What do you think? Or what's Chesterfield's position? Those sorts of things.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I've been looking at this. I'm
louder.
My question is this gentleman does he just monitor stuff for us, or is he an advocate? How does he advocate for us?
For example, on the Wayfair legislation, he asked us what language did we want to put in it, and that language ultimately got inserted into the bill.
So does he advocate with legislators? I mean, I don't know what the rules are now for lobbyists. You know?
Yeah, obviously they can't.
You can't
dine
them and gift them, and I don't know what you can't do.
Never changing right now.
I just think there's so much here. You know, I'm looking at the sales of the pool tax. I'm looking at the Wayfair tax. I'm looking at the cable franchise fees. All of these have a didn't happen for us. And so I'm thinking, what are these guys doing? What is he doing down there?
Oh, okay, so he's not making it happen, he's informing us, and is that what
I mean? And I realize he's one person, I realize that. I mean, I realize he's one, you know, he can't control law.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just playing the devil's advocate here, what's going on?
We are one of Gamble Slaymeyer's clients. We're not the sole client, we're not by far the biggest client. But what he does have is he has access to leadership, he has access to the legislators, and represents our opinion to them that we couldn't get otherwise. And a perfect example is, I think that had a significant input on the governor's veto of the legislation that actually hers was, it also had Wayfair in it, but it also had the franchise fees.
Yeah, the cable.
Definitely.
Sir?
It's not like, at this point, he is not, doesn't represent us in order to get a specific piece of legislation passed. Unlike 2016, I think it was in the second, or maybe you could say the third year, that House Bill 1561 or whatever it was passed that said no city should have to give up 50%. By the way, you know, and our contract with them was more. I think it was only $60,000 a year, but that had a specific. Our goal at that time
was to get
a legislation passed that would be helpful on the sales tax.
Another 260-some thousand.
For them to have assisted us and resulted in getting that legislation passed that was passed at the time, and I don't know if this may not still be true, but at the time the projection was that was going to save us or get us $280,000 a year going forward. Now things have changed a little bit, and I don't know what that current figure is, but you know, you could say for that $60,000 a year, whatever it was, you know, for going forward. You know, the earnings keep, and yeah, we pay less now because we're not engaged in specific legislation. But I'll say this, the legislators, they depend on these lobbyists.
They do.
Who know more about these specific bills.
They sure do.
And they depend on them to tell them what's in it, so they'll know better how they may want to vote. I don't like the system myself, but it's the system we're in. And, you know, we were successful then, and I think had this Wayfair gone another way, it would have been money well spent had Wayfair legislation passed this year. And you know, it sounds like it'll be a priority next year. And you know, we even thought until recently that or hoped that it would be a part of a special session.
Why didn't they pull Wayfair and the cable thing apart? Because they wanted it, they wanted everything to go down.
I think that's a part. That the cable, as I understand it, I could be wrong. People know a whole lot more about it than I do. But the cable can franchise industry, coupled with those ultra conservative legislators that are holding it up. They want this offset,
but they won't pass it on to
which,
the customers.
Which to me is irrational.
They're just greedy.
They knew that the reality is they knew that the Wayfair legislation was widely supported, broadly supported by communities, and that if they could attach
we're going to down
other with it, that
we're going to be the Titanic or take you with us. Okay, how much? Okay, if it's 280, I thought it was 260, but the new money that we got in from the mayor and Jeff Brooks doing that, where are we at? Can you quantify that? How much?
I can't quantify that.
But it's in the 200 some odd thousand range every year that we get.
Well,
from doing that.
This year, all bets are off.
Get it?
Because it's compared to a 2014 baseline. And,
I understand.
Yeah, so I don't have.
But it's something. It's something.
Yes.
If things get back to more normal, then we would resume that, you know, savings.
Would you call Jeff Brooks the deep state? The permanent government?
I had a few questions. One, I guess just factual stuff on this. On the how long has Mr. Brooks been with? He's been here ever since I've been here.
Me too.
Did we have someone before him, or was he kind of the first lobbyist that we had to?
We had Lou Hamilton a long
what's the,
time ago.
What's the history with that role?
Long before me, I believe he was originally hired in 2016.
I'll tell you what it was. Before we had Mike, the former Speaker of the House, who was our lobbyist beforehand, and after I became mayor, the impression I had was a nice guy. Picture him, I can't think of his last name, doesn't really matter. But we had a different lobbyist. I didn't think he was effective, so I started calling around and talking to different mayors and legislators. And as a matter of fact, Mike Lira, who was actually the state rep from Fenton, who filed the bill 1561 in 2016, he was the one that said, why don't you talk to this Jeff Brooks guy? So there were different council members at the time, so I went and talked to Jeff. He came to my house, my wife and I talked to him, and then, you know, I introduced him to a couple of other council members, like our F&A chair, or I forget who at the time. So that's how it came about, and, you know, I think it turned out to be a pretty good, a pretty smart move.
So that was before that we, Senator Schatz's tax pool.
Well, you know, at the time.
So he was the one who did that stuff, right?
He was with us. Dave Schatz was the bulldog that helped ramrod that thing through. And there are identical bills, Ben, filed in both the House and Senate. So Dave Schatz filed an identically worded bill in the Senate. Both of them passed both houses. But Schatz's bill was coupled with an omnibus bill that the governor didn't sign. So the one that actually passed was the House bill. But, so that I think we probably signed on with him in 2014 and then worked heavily in 15, didn't get the bill passed, but in 16 we did.
And then my one other question, this is the $40,000 fee, that's not like a retainer, that's like it's like more or less a subscription that we're paying to his
firm. That's the minimum fee that their corporation.
Okay, so are they they're collecting the $40,000 and then are they like billing against that? So if we have a really busy year, do they come back and ask us?
No, it's a flat monthly fee. Okay. It's a pro like a 12-month.
Okay, so there's certain services that we get. Thank you.
We'll get your basic services, which is information and stuff like that. And if they do nothing for us, then that's what we'll get, and then it's still $40,000. And if they do a whole bunch for us and get this extra thing, then it's still $40,000.
Well, we would have to. They're not going to send us a new bill. We would have to upgrade our services.
If we had interest in a more aggressive position on legislation or something, we'd have a different contract.
So, like, if we were actively pushing something, like when we were engaged in, okay, then we would need to up our services with them.
Yes.
Gotcha.
So, what if any of his other clients, is he just do St. Louis County, or he has clients all over? Okay, and what if there's a conflict of interest? Does he assign somebody else, or what do, you know, if our interests compete with some other client of his?
He identified his client conflict that we had early on.
And you say Charles, they were in Kansas City. There was one, I can't think of right off the top of my head, that he thought could be, well, he told us that they were bidding for the business, but if they would get it, they would tell this other people and that we would take priority or something like that. So, yeah, that the conflicts, the potential conflict. Conflicts of interest can come up, but I believe he
just handle it.
He identifies them initially, and there's just some issues that he wouldn't be able to represent us on if that was the case.
And we'll just deal with it. Okay, let's call the question. Have we all discussed out? Yes, sir.
I haven't said anything yet, but believe it or not, I tend to agree with what Councilmember Mastrakis was hinting at that, hey, you know, what have we really gotten from this guy? I mean, $40,000 is a lot. And I mean, it seems like, you know, during the tax pool issue, I mean, it made sense. I mean, that was, we were going for a big brass ring.
and that would have
$7 million a year.
And it was very unfair. I'm in a total agreement with the tax bill. I think it was well worth it to have a lobbyist on retainer, or however you want to put it, paying $40,000 a year. But I mean, $40,000, right now we're not delivering services on the WIS. We're talking about imposing new taxes on residents. So I think we need to scrutinize this pretty carefully. And you know, I'm not sure what we're getting from this guy either. And I'm not seeing a whole lot of accomplishments. And, you know, we've got two reps that are former council members that represent Chester. I think we have a pretty good conduit to information and updates of what's going on in Jeff City, especially as it pertains to the best interest of Chesterfield. So, and we also have senators that we can call also to rely on Chesterfield votes. In fact, Mr. Keatley and I met with Senator Kamen last year on an issue. I think it was about Better Together and some other things. And we had coffee with him. We got a whole lot of information. He got our message. And, you know, so I'm not convinced that we have to pay $40,000. We have a city attorney that makes over $200,000 a year, who has connections in Jeff City, has his ear to.
But he bills by the hour, buddy.
Yes. You know what? But that's fine. He can let us know what's going on. He's still hearing that whether he's billing us or not. And but finally, the thing I would say, too, is whose message, you know, we're, taxpayers are paying this bill.
Yep.
So then whose message are we telling the lobbyists to carry to Jeff City? So, for example, when the mayor supported a gas tax, that failed, thankfully.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think our taxpayers necessarily wanted
to
pay $40,000 a year to a lobbyist that might have been going to Jeff City.
But we did not have Jeff Brooks do anything about
that. I'm not saying we did that, because I'm just saying it just calls the question, whose message are we telling this lobby? Because we're saying, well, we're telling the lobbyists to carry this message on behalf of Chesterfield. Well, you know, the mayor's opinion on the tax, or your opinion, or my opinion, or anybody's opinion, we may not be unified on. And at the end of the day, the taxpayers are paying Jeff Brooks to carry the message.
If you're going to task somebody doing something in Jefferson City, I would assume that we'd have some kind of consensus of the council. It would be discussed with the council, and we work for the taxpayers and the residents of Chesterfield.
Exactly.
I would assume that we would do that. Let me just, and I'm going to go to you in one second, Mayor. Let me just correct you on something you said. We're talking about imposing a tax on the residents. We are miles from that. We are miles from that. If that was in the mayor's thing, you can't impose a tax on anybody. All you can do is put it on the ballot and see if they want to vote.
Well, the discussion document.
The discussion, you can put it on the
table. It's in the newsletter.
Clearly,
so that's important.
But the term imposes incorrect. All you can do is put something.
If we vote on it as a body here, then it would be imposed.
No.
Mr.
DeCampi, listen to me. All you can do is put it on a ballot. Do the
rest. You sure about that?
Well, have you read the Hancock Amendment? Yes, sir, I am, sir.
Okay. You don't think we can bring back the property tax without?
No. That, you mean the one for the parks? Bring that back?
Property tax. Is there any way to bring back a tax without going on?
No, there's no bringing back the property tax for the park. That was just
to retire the
bonds, right?
That's correct.
Okay, that's all that was. That's gone away. It's over. If you're going to impose a, and it's not imposed, if you're going to put a new tax on, you have to put it on the ballot, and the voters have to say,
right,
yes, we'll do that, we'll, or we won't do that,
yeah,
or something or other.
That's generally the way you're on.
But we can't impose anything here. We can't even, as far as I know, we can't even raise business license fees here. You know, that all, because of the Hancock Amendment, that is prohibited. So, thank God for the Hancock Amendment. Go read the Constitution.
Which is going to go away, by the way.
Amend Article 10. What's going to go away?
It's going to go away.
It's in the Constitution.
I know. Well, it's going to be amended because, guess what? We just passed the Medicaid expansion. You can't have a balanced budget with the Obamacare. That's a different story for a different discussion for a different day.
Okay.
You're right.
Jeff Brooks. Okay.
Just two things, real quickly. The gas tax. I forget the exact numbers, but Missouri has like the lowest or the second lowest gas tax of any state.
Yeah, we like it that way.
Senator Schatz, who we, you know, have a great deal of regard and respect for, was pushing that hard because he recognized the need for a gas tax to have more revenue to fix our...
Madam Chair, point of order, this is not the discussion.
No, no, you brought up, wait a minute, you're out of order. No, you brought up the gas tax.
But I didn't, it wasn't a debate about the gas tax.
Let him explain himself.
It was about the message.
Mr. DeCampi, you're out of order. Let him explain himself.
So the gas tax, I think, was kind of ridiculous. The other thing, I will share this with you. If you go to the statutes, the Missouri statutes, and you talk in the you find the section in there. I think it's section, was it chapter 135, I forget the exact chapter number. But anyway, if you go into the section of statutes that pertains to property taxes for third-class cities, the language, when you first read it, I can see how, when I first read it too, I thought, wow, we can impose this. But then you have to go further and recognize, as Councilmember McGinnis just pointed out, that the Hancock Amendment precludes any new tax from being put on. So I think that hopefully is the explanation.
Yes, thank you. And that wasn't my point. My point isn't that we're opposing to it. It's that I'm just saying we're asking the taxpayers to spend $40,000 on a political salesman in Jeff City. So we got to get this extra scrutiny because we are cutting services. We're talking about new taxes. It's not about whether the gas tax was good or not. That debate's over. Or it's not about whether we can bring, whether my wording of imposing was wrong or not. Okay, it's just that we're asking. We're having a discussion now with our residents about having new taxes. So if that's the case, we need to be really careful before we say, okay, $40,000 for a political salesman, because it's always been there for the last 4 years.
In terms of cutting services, we're talking about the Parks Department, we're talking about the pool and the amphitheaters. You're right, that happened. Are we ready to vote on this? I mean, COVID happened and we were back to good. All in favor of recommending yes, contract renewal to the council, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Nay.
Or you're, so it's three ayes and a nay. Okay, special counsel agreement, Armstrong Teasdale, what you got?
As you know, the mayor is the only one authorized to generate a recommendation for special counsel. He and I have consulted. We have prepared or received a special counsel agreement engagement letter from Armstrong Teasdale. The scope is strictly limited to the financial issues related to the mall and the adjacent property to the west. Typically what happens is if one of those property owners would come in for some sort of financial arrangement or something, we, quite frankly, it's over our head, we're outgunned immediately. We tell them that Armstrong Teasdale represents us, they act on our behalf. We then generally develop a pre-funding agreement or a funding agreement so that the charges from Armstrong Teasdale are paid by one of those property owners. If, for example, Wild Horse Village or Chesterfield Mall wanted to come in for, well, in fact, we received an initial petition for a CID. We engage the services of Armstrong Teasdale. They then negotiate a funding agreement whereby Armstrong Teasdale's expenses, invoices, are paid by Wild Horse Village or by Chesterfield Mall. But we need to have that agreement in place. So I requested the special engagement agreement from Armstrong Teasdale. They're charging at the same rate that they have under our current special engagement agreement from October 2019, but this agreement is specifically related to any development-related legal issues associated with those two properties. Yes, sir.
On this, so I saw, you said something about how for the CID applications, things like that. Would this also apply to this? Because I've seen in the previous, I noticed in the billing you've sent out with Armstrong Teasdale, and it doesn't look like we, from what you sent out in 2020 since I made the request to see those, the what we were engaging them on, it doesn't, I mean, we don't do a lot with them. It's on a very, very sporadic basis, it looked like. But like there was stuff in there related to the NIDs. Would we continue using them for those type of districts?
Yes, they were actually the ones that prepared our NID policy and worked with us. There are multiple tentacles, if you will, between the city and Armstrong Diesel. Number one, I'm sure you're aware, they're top in the field and in a very limited scope. But they are the TDD council. They worked on our Blue Valley CID petition. They're also our council when we have questions as it relates to the North Outer 40 TDD. And in that case, we're not the administrators. We have a seat on the board, but the North Outer 40 TDD has their own council. So when we need information, we go to Armstrong Teasdale so that we're at an informational par with them. When we were dealing with the tax legislation, that was covered under our special counsel agreement. Brandywine NID, because of their experience with NIDs, we utilize them there. So there's multiple places and avenues that were interconnected. Some of them are complete separate political subdivisions, not really directly affiliated with the city, but they're affiliated with city positions, if that makes sense. This one is just related to those properties as they interact with the city.
This isn't, so this agreement wouldn't replace the stuff that we already are contracting, so there would be some additional items that would appear on these invoice lists that we would also consult with them.
Yeah, I mean, we get a bill from it. Yeah, it may be billed under a different contract, but all the invoices we get from Armstrong Teasdale will be forwarded.
I had a question on one line item from one of these, but I don't think it's related to this, okay, this specific contract, so I'll probably just ask you separately.
Sure.
Instead of going through.
Let me ask for a motion to approve this.
So moved.
And a second. Okay. Discussion. Sir.
Okay, what are they doing that Chris Greville cannot
do? Chris Greville will be the first one to tell you that's his specialty is municipal law, not development, finance, special development districts. Yeah, his words will be, he's in over his head on this sort of thing.
Thank you.
Well, and you know, if they're each paid by the hour, either we pay them, but we pay Gravel.
Right. Well, in this case, we, you know, other than maybe some initial setup, these charges would be charged back to the property. Whereas if our city attorney did it, it would be charged to us.
Okay. Did you hear that, Pastor?
Okay. This specifically pertains to TDD, CID?
No, this specific, if you look at the scope of the engagement, it's solely in connection with the proposed
just the mall and its environment.
Chesterfield Mall and the proposed development of certain adjacent land located to the northwest of Chesterfield Mall.
It's just
right. It won't get into the TDD with that area or anything else?
It won't get into an existing TDD. I have no idea if one of those properties propose a TDD, a TIF, a NID, a SID, or whatever other combination of alphabet they want to put together, will go to them because, again, that's their specialty.
Okay, who submitted what so far? So far, you've got an application.
Wildhorse Village sent
an application.
A very superficial application for a CID,
yes,
which we returned to them and said, this lacks the specificity for us to even do an initial review.
Okay, so I guess my question would have.
That's all we have so far.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Chair, yes, I guess what I'm getting at is we're not hiring them because they're specialists in special taxation districts necessarily, right? It's more because they're just specialists in development?
No, I think they are specialists in special taxation districts and development-related issues.
But we're hiring them to react to these petitions?
Yes.
But we don't...
To provide us counsel, legal counsel, if in fact we are presented with those petitions that might relate to financing our special development agreements on those properties.
That doesn't mean we're giving them anything. Nobody.
I understand that. I'm trying to understand this, you know.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I'm crystal clear on this, that we're not hiring them because
to facilitate
special, you know, TIFs or CIDs or TV.
Oh, no.
Okay.
So we're not
doing that. The question.
I would anticipate, because we already have received a petition.
I know.
I want to have the best in show representing us to tell me what I don't know.
Okay. I just want to make sure, and I know the tent cupping has already begun, but I just want to make sure we're not doing this to help facilitate tax, any kind of tax districts.
To prevent us from making a mistake.
Okay, thank you.
I just add, as a routine matter, this city, from time to time, engages and does business where we have a need for a particular expertise in law. Rob Carr is the one that wrote our sales tax legislation.
Just making sure there are no alternative motives here. I'm asking the question in the open.
We are miles from anything, and this council's the last word on all that stuff.
Good. Thank you.
Oh, Dan. Another country heard from. Yes,
Mr. Geisel, a question to you. The outline, as far as the scope, addressing the mall in the area northwest of the mall, is there a particular reason why it's limited to that geographic location, because it will be developed in other areas in the core that could be impacted by what these people plan on doing and what would be needed in this regard?
Two answers to that. Number one, if there are related improvements or related impacts that emanate from those developments, they would be covered. But if there were other properties, let's say the Mercy property on the southeast corner came in, we would request a separate engagement agreement on that. We want to have agreements that are as unique and specific as possible rather than give us carte blanche to use them wherever.
Okay, thank you.
Did I have a motion on table? I did, didn't I?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a motion in a second.
Okay.
Discussion.
Are we ready to wrap this up? And all in favor, signify by saying aye?
Aye.
We have four ayes? Okay, we'll get four ayes. Okay, there you go. You wear me out, Tom. Okay, financial update, and then we go to finance 103. Does anybody want a bottle of water or something before we start?
There are drinks up here in the cool.
Okay. Bring me one of water, be great. Financial update, Ms. Jeanette. Thank you.
Last week you would have received the September financial update, and as you know, that's on a cash basis. So although it's for September what we actually received, it's actually for the revenues that we generated through July, actually, in the retail stores. So with regards to our pool receipts, we are down 3.64% or about $188,000 September year to date against the budget. And we're down 6.2% or $330,000 related to last year at the same time.
Question. You said against the budget.
Yes.
Isn't it against September 2019?
September.
Actual.
So.
I'm sorry.
Two different things. September year to date. Budget, what we anticipated,
yes,
based on looking at
is down,
the five-year average,
yes,
where we expected it to be, you comparing year-to-date only,
yes,
through the budget. We were down 180,000 budget year-to-date September.
Okay.
So last year, for that same September year-to-date,
yes,
we were down 6.2% or 330,000 for the pool tax.
Anyway, yeah.
So.
Okay.
With regards to Prop P, looking at those same parameters against the budget year to date, we were down 5.23% or $105,000, and against last year to date, 5.72% or $115,000. For our parks, we were down, parks and capital both, we were down more. The parks is down almost 11% at $561,000 through the budget. And very similar, $579,000 less than last year, or 11%.
Oh boy.
With regards to capital, we were down 11% to the budget at $482,000. And $493,000 to last year. So in total, against the budget, we're down about 8% or $1.3 million year to date through September. And against last year, we're down 9% or $1.5 million. So although those sound significant, because they are, you have to realize we are also doing better than what we had anticipated due to the pandemic. So our projections through the pandemic, we would have been considerably less revenues. And we're estimating for the year that we are going to be down approximately 9% off of the budget, or just shy of $2 million for the revenues.
Yeah, and that's sales
tax. And that's sales tax only. That is not looking at any program revenues for the parks. That's not looking at court receivables, et cetera. I am still anticipating that we are going to be over $5 million down in total revenues across all funds and all programs.
Which, compared to a couple of things, that's total losses. It's also important to keep that in context with the original pandemic strategy and losses predicted up to what, and this was for the 120-day event, which clearly we're at 120 days plus, of up to $9 million as the worst case.
And that did not include any program revenues, court receivables, et cetera.
That's correct. Now, so when you're talking about $1.3 million, reality is our sales tax losses have been less than half of what we anticipated.
Okay, but we're down $5 million is what you said.
No,
what I'm anticipating for year end.
For the year end, well, we're almost there.
But that includes, for example, $200,000 in field rent. But that's also offset by, remember, we committed to reducing expenditures by roughly $3 million because we didn't hire any seasonal staff to keep the fields running and all those sorts of things. So
you should have a surplus in parks in the parks fund.
Well, you still don't. Still not a surplus.
I understand. Unfortunately,
the debt service is still being
charged. Oh, yeah. McCarthy's
and when you have
a
$7 million sales tax and $3 plus million of debt consumed by debt service, that's a problem.
Which makes this $3.2 million that we could possibly get from this $47 million will plug a lot of holes around here, right? What is something trying to come out of your mouth?
Let's just. She said she expected. Genetic director Kelly said that she expected us to have total losses on the year roughly $5 million.
$5 to $6 million.
I'll say $6 million. To be safe. We save $3 million. We get $3 million.
The lateral moves.
I think we have weathered this incredibly well. And we will, in fact, I think you're going to find that we have saved more than the $3 million. And on top of all of that, well, as I stepped out, we ended up last year better than we expected as well. So we've got a couple of things that we'll talk about shortly. If you're looking at a point in time, and we'll shift out of this pandemic and our current financial structure, we are in a very sound financial picture right now because of the actions we have taken aggressively. And, you know, although we are blessed that we might get the $3.2 million, even if that's not the case, we will be better off than we expected.
Okay, so to be jeering about losing $6 million is mind-numbing, but I guess if you thought you were going to lose $9 million, I guess it's better. However, you said we saved $3 million. Didn't you just postpone purchases and postpone activities and postpone stuff? Did we really save it or just put it off?
No, there were some deferrals. Obviously, there were capital projects that were deferred. There were capital equipment that was deferred, which can't continue to defer. But there were permanent reductions as well. A lot of the staffing issues, the reductions in salary expenses, and there are some things that we just completely avoided.
You know, we maximize that to the extent we can. And I will also say, as we you kind of mentioned or hinted at Monday night at the council meeting, we were very selective in the projects and the equipment and all the deferrals, such that we still had a very aggressive capital program. We did shut the road. We did all of our scheduled slab replacement. We did those projects we didn't just kick that can down the road. Our citizens were well served, and they actually got as much of a capital program in 2020 as they did in 2019. Now, that we benefited, by the debt service for R&S, $1.9 million was retired in 2019.
Yeah.
That allowed us to continue the capital program at the level it was previously. So Director Eckrich and his folks were very active in capital projects all summer and continue to do so. One of which, as well, is the Brandywine MID, which I drove through there just earlier this week. I think our residents were well served by the projects that we did not defer or delay.
Well, and the Parks and the CAPS funds will tell you the shopping in Chesterfield is lower than in any other part of St. Louis County because Prop P is countywide. So we're really affected by rolling of the sidewalks at 10 o'clock at night.
Lower than the county as a whole, not any part of the same.
Okay, you are correct. I misspoke. I shouldn't have said it. You had a better way of saying it. He is absolutely right. Exactly. So, yes, ma'am.
So how much are we not generating because the courts are not in session?
Lauer.
Our,
he asked about how much we're not generating because the courts
are not in session.
Our court revenue is budgeted annually at roughly $800,000. If we see half of that, I will be surprised. It is recovering right now. We are still processing municipal violations. We still conduct court activities. We're just not physically having court. So tickets and summonses are still being written, and to the extent they can be disposed of, non-personally, virtually, in fact, some courts are being handled virtually. We're still doing that. So there is revenue coming in, but there were two or three months where it was virtually nothing, no pun intended. So I expect probably 50% hit on that.
Let me ask you this. Does anybody think it's cold in here, or is it just me? You're cold?
I'm not cold.
No, it's not about you.
It's got a jacket.
No.
It's a little chilly.
It's a little chilly.
Well, I'll take my jacket off.
Can you fix the... Does that be the...
I cannot, Jim. Can you?
You want it warmer in here?
Warmer? A little warmer?
Yes.
It's a little chilly in here. I mean, we got to pay this bill. It's about $30,000 a month.
Well, I think it's hard to determine how many people are going to be in here, so that's why...
Well, we have a maximum of whatever we got. Thank you, Sam Page. So we
fixed it. Depends how much hot air it'll be circulated.
It's just coming from over there.
What's that?
Okay. So, any other thing about the monthly report? You're all absorbing that body blow. Hey, when you do, this is Barb's personal opinion, when you do the budget this time, will you not put any pool cars and stuff in it? Let's just live with what we got.
You just approved a vehicle replacement plan couple of months ago.
Well, I
was
kidding.
Tell you what that answer is. It's all ultimately your choice. I don't know if that's a wise
decision. They've sat around here for months and months, you know, without people using them because everybody's working from home.
Well, that's not accurate. I mean, still had all of our capital projects going, and people that are working from home aren't people that use
it. We don't need a bunch of cars sitting downstairs doing nothing. Go ahead.
All right, before...
Finance 103, here we go.
Well, almost. I want to wrap up a couple things. We hinted at where we're at in our good financial position right now. We've updated our current end-of-year projection. As I tell you every year, when we start budget, it's always, you're kind of by your thumb. It's middle of the year. We haven't finished our audit for the prior year, so we're using last year's end-of-the-year numbers, and we're guessing what our end-of-year expenditures would be, and that's what we use to prepare your budget for the following year. So it's not a whole lot better than throwing darts, but we have updated our fund balance sheets to include everything we know to date. We really spent a lot of time this year in the departments going to and identifying what we believe our end-of-year expenses are going to be. Because we were very austere, we cut a lot of those things. We know where they're going to be. So I'm pleased to tell you that our current general fund estimated balance, including the MRP funding from county, which is 3.2, and includes the $4 million cash contribution for the land purchase. Now, this doesn't include any of the debt service, obviously we won't do that until next year. But even with the pandemic, we're going to be almost $3 million over our 40% fund balance, 40% fund balance policy. You may remember earlier projections had that down as low as 13%. So we are really happy that we've made some additional reductions and puts us in a really good place. And obviously the $3 million doesn't hurt, but when you're talking about a fund balance of over $9 million, it's more than just that $3 million. Go to the park sales tax. That fund balance was projected going into the budget year for the end of this year at less than $1 million. And we're now projecting it to be at $1.9 million. That's with all the pandemic impacts and all the savings associated with it. Really positive news. Capital, we were originally projected to be at $76,000 negative balance because we had a very aggressive capital program. But with all the capital projects and things that were cut, we're now projecting almost $800,000 as our end of year fund balance. And that will be the end of where we are as far as talking about this year's finances. Current financial condition, we're in a very good, sound financial position as we speak, and for the rest of this year, I think we're in good shape. But as we move forward, we're going to be talking about the ghost of budget past, the ghost of budget future, and the ghost of budget present. One other thing I will tell you, that those fund balances exclude, they do not include the $5 million that's set aside for debt prepayment. So when you talk about $9 million in the fund reserve, general fund reserve, that doesn't include that $5 million that you've earmarked. So if you want to inflate that theoretically, it'd be $14 million.
Mr. Geisler,
yes, ma'am.
Are you expecting an interactive thing where we can...
I am not. I'm leading you down a path, but I will react to whatever you have.
Okay, because. Okay.
Yes.
Now, the $5 million, okay, but in this year's budget, we have the City Hall payment. Has that been made?
Yes.
Okay, and in that $5 million is the last City Hall payment.
In the five, yeah. In fact, that's the slide that's up above you right now.
Yes.
The two remaining payments for City Hall, which is why you have your paid statement.
Yes.
The debt service for City Hall, 1.4 next year, 1.125 in the following year. That money is set aside.
Yes.
And that's paid for unless you steal it for some other purpose.
No, we're not stealing.
The 583 is that prepayment that was set aside this year to pay this year's payment. We had a $1.9 million debt service payment, but it was offset by some of that prepayment. In the right-hand column, those are the amounts that you have set aside in the parks fund to reduce that debt service that's currently going out to 2031 to try to get it to below $3 million. Anything we can do to lower that, obviously the parks budget is very stressed. That's out there. It helps a lot.
And that money is set aside as well.
That's set aside and
not including reserves.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So now we're going to talk about Finance 103. And I'm going to start this with data is neither good nor bad. Data is just what it is. I have a obsessive tendencies, and I'm a little bit obsessed with numbers, and I would say probably for 3 or 4 months, I have looked at things in 100 different ways, and things just appear to you. So there's a lot of information here. There's a story to be told, but at the end of it, you guys ultimately have to tell us where we're going to go. And because there's just realities, you know, there's bumper stickers and slogans you can all use, but ultimately there's realities that we have to face. So good, bad, or indifferent, we're in a great financial position. That's now behind you. Now let's talk in more global terms. And as I was looking at some of this material, you'll find there's some slides that are identical, except the time period is different. And it's amazing how a graph will appear different, or information will appear different, depending on what the axes are. If you're going from 2014, you're going from 2010, you're going from 2007, it shows you a larger trend. All of that's important, and I'm only asking you to digest it, and you'll come to your own conclusions. But to start with, why are we here? We're here to provide services. That's the sole and exclusive reason that I know of that we're here. So we provide those services to our residents. We do all of those things. All these services are scalable. You add services, you take away services, you grow, those services expand, you contract, those services receive. Entirely scalable. You just got to have clear direction where you're going to go. Municipal growth happens in a different way. It's not a static issue. You have a lot of things that you have to worry about. You've got inflation, obviously commodities, equipment, labor, services, utilities, all those things come into play over a period of time, not on a year-to-year basis as much. Inflation has been under control, but when you're looking at a decade of things, obviously the electric rates, the bullets, you know, irrigation costs, you know, for medians over $100,000, all those things, everything costs more money over time. We all know that. We inherently know it. It's not debatable. The only thing that probably hasn't gone up in the last 10 years is really the cost of fuel. And it went up, and now it's come back down. We are continuously hit with regulatory impact. It impacts our processes, the materials we're allowed to use, how much we're allowed to use, oversight. Our vehicles have different, you buy a diesel truck now, and it's got to have a DEA cleaner on it, that adds about $10,000 to it. The regulators talk about how we can rebuild streets, and you've got to add water quality to it. You've got all sorts of those issues. And then you've got growth. You've got the stuff that we do. And growth comes in a variety of ways. You have new and expanded programs. I constantly have to put a bridle on Tom because he's wanting to create all sorts of new things, and all things cost money. There are new and expanded facilities and amenities you want to add. You just bought some park, you just acquired some parkland, you're going to acquire more parkland. You're adding facilities, you've added, you know, amphitheater, the athletic fields, River's Edge Park, all those things we talk about. And then there's new development. Now, every week you're approving some sort of new development. It may be residential, commercial, or industrial. But those are growing the city as well. It comes with revenue, and it comes with an expense. Just by way of history, the city of Chesterfield's assessed valuation since 1990 has grown 2.6 times. We are the largest assessed, largest valued municipality in St. Louis County at $2.2 billion. The next closest is the city of Clayton, Maryland Heights, is half of that. Wildwood is $1.15 billion. It's not even close. It's important. And you see how we've grown. We've grown at 2.6 times the rate of inflation during that time. So it's not just the increase of the housing stock or the development stock that's there. Same time, annual CPI, you look at the compound value. What period do you want to look at? started from 1990, we started from 2000 or 2010. The one constant here is the cost of a loaf of bread over time goes up. How much it goes up is dependent on the time period you look at. But again, so the cost to provide a uniform level of service, whatever you're providing at the service level to the fixed number of consumers that you have over there, it's going to increase with time regardless of what you do. Our actual expenses, and this is one of those slides that you're going to see in a couple different fashions. This shows the actual expenses from 2010 compared to the CPI, and it specifically shows three major cost centers. And we got more, but and you'll see some of those, but these are where your expenses are located. You've got your parks, you've got your police function, law enforcement, and you've got general fund, all the other expenses minus police. So all the stuff that gets looped in together, not including capital projects, but all the administrative stuff, street department, facilities, IT, all that stuff without police. So if you're looking at it, the green line is parks, and you see how over the course of the last 10 years, it's exceeded inflation. Well, that should surprise you. You had a $30 million expansion. We opened the amphitheater in 2011, the F Athletic Fields, River's Edge Park. We've had wetlands, levee trail expansions, all of that. So it shouldn't. I mean, what kind of surprised you a little bit is it isn't larger. The police department's the blue line. It's exceeded slightly the cost of living. But remember, that also includes in 2017 the Clarkson Valley contract, which is roughly $400,000. Is that $407,000 is that required? Remember? But this is really important. You look at the red line. That's all the other expenses as it relates to the cost to the city. Since 2010, we have dropped all other expenses by $2 million below the CPI. So everything, you'll see this coming through in a few different places. So kind of gives you an idea of what's growing and what's being stretched, where the fat has been cut and what you might think or believe that there's more there. Same thing here, if you look just from 2014, it's a little bit different. You see by 2014, we were just bringing in some of those things. 2014, by the way, was when the outlet malls opened and we hired 8 policemen, I believe, at that time. Some of those expenses were charged to parks. So you see from that point forward, that trend line goes down. Police made a jump up in 2017, but again, all the other expenses, everything, a general fund without police, has been dramatically reduced since 2014 as well. Talk a little bit about development, and it's always concerned me as development comes into the city, it's decoupled financially. You make decisions on, do you want single family housing, do you want multifamily, do you want industrial or commercial? There's a financial component to any development that enters the city. Again, both revenue and expenditures. And so staff work to develop a model. It's not intended to take a single development and accurately predict within 2 decimal places you're going to generate X number of dollars of revenue, X number of dollars of expenses. But when you aggregate all of the data, it gives you a pretty good approximation. They spent a couple of months doing it. And from 2000 to 20, we've added 2,078 residential units and over $4.5 million square feet of non-residential. That's a pretty good addition, expansion of those properties and residents that have to be served. And as an example, just to give you an idea, you look at Phoenix Farms. 223 homes were added. Obviously, they added streets and all those sorts of things. The net impact, based on our model, net impact of that to the city is it's going to cost us $180,000 a year. That includes street replacement, street repairs, no plowing, patrolling, their additional use in the parks, writing payroll, everything else. That's a total cost to the city. It's a prorated share. But Athena Farms, they obviously have a right to develop their property. We estimate it's going to cost about, we're now absorbing that $180,000. Watermark, on the other hand, is 345 units, a much different configuration. There's no public streets, much more condensed. That's still negative slightly. It only costs about $7,200 a year. So that kind of gives you an idea of how the model works.
Sir.
Yes, ma'am.
We can't deny zoning on the basis of we can't afford this.
Absolutely cannot. It's baked into the system.
And can these fiscal notes be put out there with every single development?
You guys they can, but there are limitations to the model, and I wouldn't want to infer that it accurately predicts an individual development. You don't know, for example, if I'm treating an industrial development, and I have a warehouse versus an airport hangar, maybe the police requirement is different. But I think when you look at it in aggregated terms, it does accurately provide it. Yes, we can provide this information, but we'll put a disclaimer on it.
Put a disclaimer, this may or may not be true, but this is where we think we
are. Yeah, this is based on our development model. This is the first time.
That's really amazing you were able to figure this out.
We've worked on it for a lot of time, but it's important. These things happen to us all the time, and we're not victims. We need to know it's happening while it happens.
So just FEMA was another $200,000 a year for us.
Yes. Oh, just hold tight. It gets better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
So are we including what these people would spend?
Yeah.
Yes.
The sales taxes
right there. This is the net. That's all in.
Yes.
That's
the net. That's a 681 on the spreadsheet.
Right. Now realize there's different sales taxes. The ones, you've got a different, our model includes the parks and capital sales tax. If they spend that in Chester, we get it.
Yes.
But if they spend it, the 1 cent capital sale, that goes to the pool and is probably not an increase to us. And even if it did, we wouldn't see that until 10 years from now.
What you got, Mike?
I was going to say, have you done this or do you have the capability to do this for something like Pfizer?
I think we should. I personally think that there should be some sort of financial analysis that goes forward with any sizable development potential.
Yeah, because Pfizer, we don't follow their model.
No.
Of course not.
But Blue Valley, for example, that. Most of that is we have that actually modeled. Most of that is commercial, it's privately owned and maintained. But we've got a 5-lane street that we added because we have this vision of what's going to happen with 109 and a half. I will tell you, come snowplow time, we've got a tandem dump truck runs up and down, because that's what it takes everything you can do to keep up with that 5-lane street.
Now, you said you would like to have a fiscal note with every development. So, can you just make that happen? Do you need a sense of the
kind? Yeah, but we wouldn't want to introduce it without you seeing it first. And we're still perfecting the model, I think. Justin, would you agree with
this?
Everybody that you see in the back of the table.
Congratulations, honestly, for Pete's sake, but it's frightening.
But notice also, there's a cost component, but there's a revenue component there, too.
Yeah,
so that's a net number that we come out with. So when you look at this development since 2010, highlighted here that when you aggregate all that information since 2010, you've added 11.4 miles of streets roughly. The net impact of that, if our model predicted everything, we'd only be $321,000 short. The reality is, though, we haven't recognized those revenues, and there's a lot of reasons we haven't recognized those revenues. Regulatory involvement, intrusion by the state, and changing how taxes can be collected. You know, for example, if they want to take the franchise tax away, a franchise fee, it's not a tax actually. But all those things come into pass, so we model what they should generate, but in some cases we have not realized all of that.
That revenue number 681, that's the estimates on sales tax revenue generated by those 4,500 units.
681, I'm looking for that number.
Yeah, where is 681?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's a number that comes about, and it's linked to a spreadsheet that has components for police, okay. IT, and everything
okay.
else.
So
everybody inputs their input.
Well, what you're saying is that, you know, on the average, you go around the pool of averages 2 feet deep, but on average, the city generates or recognizes $681 per residential unit in sales tax revenue.
Yes.
Per year.
Yes.
Sales tax.
Does that accurately represent it, Justin?
I think that's what we would like it to be.
Yes.
That's
what it should produce.
So, you know, if we want to maintain our current level of service,
right.
That's what we need to hit. For every house, we need to add $681.
Now, for example, a council member of the cabinet, did I interrupt you?
Oh, no, I was just saying sales tax. Just clarify, sales tax is the $681.
Yes.
Okay, what about utility?
Oh, that's utility tax as well.
That's everything we get, 5% utility,
yes.
Sales tax. That's all we get.
So as an example, we took Wild Horse Village, since that just came in recently, and we say, and as you know, there was a huge issue with Wild Horse Village about all these improvements that people wanted, all these amenities, the parks and all the internal roads and all that. And at the staff level, we talked to the planning commission and said, we have no ability to absorb those additional amenities in that sort of development. So in the upper left-hand corner of your slide, you see the only improvement that we are taking over with, which is what is in the current ordinance, is Burkhart Place. That Burkhart Place gets built by a $2 million improvement by itself. But the development will net us $79,000 positively. And again, there's not a whole lot of demand for services there. It'll net us $79,000. If, however, we made the decision along the way and somebody decided to make a motion and said, well, we think these streets ought to be public, you look at the lower left-hand side, and that $79,000 becomes $7,000 a year. It's still positive in this case. That's a largely commercial development. But you can see how quickly the services are diluted and pulled away because of how a development is configured. If you look on an annual basis, how our obligations have been extended. These are additional services, additional consumers. We have to meet the same consumers for these new developments that we do everybody else. They get equal protection as well. Residential development, again, we covered that, 2,300. That's the actual list of them and the number of lots. We did the background on the commercial and industrial. You see 23 million, almost 24 million square feet of new commercial development, 650,000 square feet of industrial development. That's since 2010. Again, roughly 11.38. That's because it's an average of 26 feet wide. But because of the regulatory environment, sometimes it's 25, sometimes it's 38. But if you assume a 26-foot wide street, it's 11.4 miles. That we've added, that we've had to add to our rules we take care of. Now, forget about development all the time. Where have we selectively decided that we're going to expand the city? You know, where we made decisions that we're going to increase what we provide, the offerings. This gets right to your land purchase and everything else. We compiled some metrics on how the city has grown over time. We just selectively put public street mileage. Since 2000, it's grown 26 miles. So 11.4 since 2010, 26 since then. I can tell you that when we did our bond issue in 1997, we were responsible for 130 miles of streets. Now it's 176 miles. Street lights have gone from 10 street lights to 234 new lights. We are now responsible for, in some way or another, we have to pay for that. Patrol units, marked patrol units on the street, have gone up by 12 units. Parks acreage has increased from 200 to 393 acres. And it goes across the board. We've also added the amphitheater. We've added, we've expanded in virtually every category. And we've done that consciously. We've added those. Good decisions to make, but they obviously have financial impacts. Put together just a list. This is the unbridled Tom McCarthy. You think about, we passed the park sales tax in 2004, and we have just been galloping, all the way through to about 2014, adding things, expanding, making it better. And it's great for the community. We certainly think we have a really robust set of offerings. 141 came in, and the city decided, you know what? We're not going to allow an industrial street going in. We're going to landscape that. We're going to maintain that. Does it surprise you that you're spending $500,000 or more a year on beautification islands, $100,000 or more on irrigation of those islands? It seems like an incredible number, but you bought it, and it's yours. And we had a tree gets hit, you've got to replace it. All those things happen. I won't go through each one of those. But every time you add something, you're adding an obligation. Personnel, this is where it gets a little sticky. Personally, one thing I think we can all agree on is government, if left unchecked, will grow uncontrollably. And it's important that we control that. I think we do that very effectively. So we spent a good deal of time, going back all the way from the beginning and saying, okay, how have we grown and where have we grown? So this graph tracks all of our history. When do you see spikes in people and where those people are? So you go along, we incorporate in 1988, the police department rolls off the lot in 1989 with a full police department. So we're gradually ramping things up, and one of the first things we had to do was start taking care of streets and all those sorts of things. But lo and behold, in 1994, we passed a $10 million bond issue for parks. We bought the first 38 acres for Central Park and started building the pool. Guess what? You added police. The Parks Department was created for the first time. We hired one person down there. So that was the origins. Then you go along, 1996, our streets were a mess. We passed the voters approved the half-cent sales tax for streets and sidewalks, and we issued a $30 million bond issue. We didn't hire people at that time. We hired contract employees, contract engineers, and project managers, and we literally replaced one-third of our streets at that point in time. So it doesn't surprise me that there wasn't a huge growth in our street department at that time.
These numbers on this chart, these are bodies, right?
These are full-time equivalents, yes.
Full-time, FTEs, okay.
Yes. Then 1997. Yes, ma'am.
Did you put this together?
Yes, ma'am.
This is amazing. This is just so obviously right in your face. Mm-hmm. I mean, there it is.
1997, the pool opens. All right, now you got to staff the pool, you got to have somebody running the pool. Although we contracted out for that. In 1999, We had this deal with the CBSA and city council negotiated with a whole lot of folks. Ascension had a 5-property swap, and the concept was to have the Chesterfield Valley Athletic Complex, of which we own 25 acres, and we were going to build some of these capital improvements, but the CBSA was going to manage it for us, and they were going to operate it. Within 1 year, they came back and said, we cannot, we're not capable of operating this, and they asked us to take it over, and so we did, of course, and they in fact gave us all their property, they gave us all their equipment, we acquired it at no cost. We gave them $100,000 field credits for 20 years, which have since expired, but we've extended them. And then we turned around and sold easements on the property that we just got for nothing for $500,000 to the levy district so that we could pave the parking lot. We then became the proud owners of and operators of an athletic complex. Again, we started off by contracting for operation of the concessions. Some days they'd be open, some days they wouldn't. Didn't work out, we're going to do it ourselves. And at that time, we were contracting with a private company for mowing and taking care of the beautification islands and the quadrants. Problem was, MoDOT only allows you to do that between 9 and 3 for on Tuesday through Thursday, and if it rains, you were put back, and you now were subject to wherever else the company was. But since we had an athletic complex, we had people with mowers. We had people who knew about landscapes, so we brought that in-house, too. You see a little jump in parks there. City Hall opened in 2001. No surprise, you got facility staff, right? If you're going to take care of a facility, you got to take care of it. So you see the jump up a little bit there. Park sales tax was passed in 2004. Between 2004 and 2011, Amphitheater, Central Park, F Athletic Field, Park Improvements, Everline Park, Riparian Trail, Parks Maintenance Facility, Levy Trail, Wetland Mitigation Areas were all added.
That's money.
Can't do it by yourself. Can't do it with the same. So then you move forward. Outlet Malls opened in 2013. Have to add police. 2016, we contracted, that's when we, 2017, the contract started, it was the middle of 2016, contracted with Clarkson Valley. So I've gotten on this graph, you've got these, I've actually got it by each sub-function, but I've combined for this purpose the all other graphs. So that kind of gives you the personnel history.
What's capital?
Capital is a capital projects fund. We hire, we have an engineer and a project manager funded out of that, right? And we actually have a mechanic funded out of it. Again, whether or not that's appropriate, that's where it was placed, because that we could cover that cost. So what becomes real clear is there's two areas where we've grown, and you've done it knowingly, willingly, intentionally. Police and parks, directly for the resident. And in fact, all other areas are below where we were in 2010. That was at when we did the right sizing, by the way. You see that pretty steep cut. And every area took it, but some of these other areas have recovered. So there's no willy-nilly growth or uncontrolled growth here. The growth has been associated with improvements, expansions, and additions. So now let's shift to revenues for a second. This is all funds together, and you realize that capital is funded fully by a sales tax, parks is funded mostly by a sales tax, but they internally generate about $2 million in revenue as well. 55%, and you've heard this now for 4 years since I took the oath, you have an unhealthy reliance on sales tax. It's volatile, it's a diminishing resource for a lot of reasons, but there's also a false there's a false concentration. That's the first thing we look at when we look at our financials. Our sales tax numbers are down. 55%, it's critical, it's unhealthy. You've got to address it. At some point, you've got to address it. Utility taxes are significant. They're of the general fund, that's about a third. But when you dilute that with the capital and parts, it's only 18%. And then you've got everything else, the largest portion of which is intergovernmental taxes. That's motor fuel taxes, vehicle sales taxes, those sorts of things. Lots of stuff here, again, you're going to see these things again. These are total revenues, all the funds combined. And you just look, you know, this graph shows it from 2014. We had total revenues of $40 million. 2019 actuals were at $39,000. Now, that includes the addition of $2.6 million from Prop P. Yes, Prop P saved our bacon. No pun intended. But clearly, our general fund revenue and our total revenues are less than they were 5 years ago. And you say, ah, well, maybe it's just you're cherry picking the data. I did, by the way, the purple line there says if I take that 40,000, 3031, and I just inflate it for inflation, let's pretend we didn't add Clarkson Valley. Let's pretend we didn't add the IT contract. And this is, you know, all those sorts of, all those are revenues coming in. If those didn't happen, that number would be 45,000 versus 39.6 right now, just to keep track with inflation. So then you look and say, okay, well, let's look at the same thing, but let's take it back. Now let's just look at the general fund. And I know here, this is excluding transfers and deferrals. There's when you look at the accounting, if we transfer $7 million from the general fund to the public safety fund, it shows up as an expense in two places. So it looks like we've spent $14 million, but the reality is we've only spent once. So you take that out. There's no sleight of hand here. This actually normalizes those sorts of things. So if you're just looking at the general fund, you're looking at, in 2014, total revenues. These are actual numbers coming from our audited financial statements, and that's why we only go to 2019. I'm not giving you make-believe numbers for 2020. These are audited final numbers. So we've gone from 2014, where we had 21,700,000, in 2019, we're at 21,025. And that's not an anomaly. You look at the last 3 years, that's total revenues. We're flat and decreasing. So we're $700,000 less in the general fund that doesn't fund itself. It funds everything else, and $7 million of that, almost $8 million of that, goes to fund the police department as well. All that money is decreasing. It's a diminishing resource. If you just adjusted the 2014 numbers, you'd be at 24.5. Now, general fund total revenues. I took this, and what this says is, all right, you're concerned about my reporting. Am I looking at 2014? Am I looking at the last decade, 2010? Am I looking at 2007? This gives you the whole picture. This is all the data that's in our financial software, which we picked up in 2006. And then I turned around and said, okay, let's run the CPI from 2007. Let's run it from 2010. Let's run it from 2014 and see where we should be. But what jumps out at you is our revenue at $25,000 in 2019. And look at where it was in 2007. By the way, 2008, that spike was a cell phone settlement. We got a $2 million windfall that year. So if you're looking why that spikes. So, wow, we've got an increase from 2007 to 2019 of right at $1 million over a period of time that you should be closer to 30%. Same data. Again, this is general fund total revenue. 2019 general fund total revenues are $682,000 more than 2010, $760,000 less than 2014. And again, keep this in context. This is all the while that we're still developing, we're expanding our service base. Tom's adding programs. He's got all sorts of things for the kiddies out there that we've added. You bought park land. You've done all this stuff. and our revenue is going down. Now, that should raise a red flag. We've been able to maintain services, but it raises a red flag, which we'll talk about. So now let's look at those revenues. Why? Where are they going? All right, so and you've seen this before, just maybe not in this format. Utility taxes. Well, you know, they kind of trudged along. The one good news is we've got electric has gone up, but man, we have tanked on telephones. Well, what happened? That's that regulation. You know, we had that court win that said cell phones are phones, they're not radios. The utility tax applies to them. So now you've got a cell phone plan, you probably pay $100 a month for whatever it is. But you look at it, because the state legislature then came in and said, okay, you can't tax internet. So now your phone, your data plan, they say that's 10 bucks, but $90 is data. You've lost it. It's gone. It's been taken out of our revenue.
Thank you, legislature.
Yes, exactly. So in utility taxes, during the last decade, you put all of them together, we've lost 7.6%. Intergovernmental revenues, we've actually increased over that period of time. They're relatively flat across the board there. You've got a little blip on the end for the county road and bridge tax, which is based on our assessed value, but 4.15% over a 10-year period when inflation is 18%, compounded 18%. Again, quibble with those numbers a little bit. The trend is obvious. So then you look at sales tax, and that's the thing we obsess about. And this is the same graph, two different time periods. You show it from 2007, you show it from 2010. In actuality, sales taxes have increased. They're one of the bright spots, if you will. The problem is, if you look at them, they've kept up with inflation during that time period. But what have we added during that time period? How much additional sales have we added since 2010? You know, we've added the out of malls and everything. Now, the mall was declining before that, so you can't equate that. But clearly, the city has expanded in the last 10 years. So the fact that our sales tax has slightly, or just say it's kept up with inflation during that period of time, that's good, but realize that it's being siphoned off for some other reasons. So, what do I make out of that? My comment? Revenue is losing ground in real terms without even any regard for expansion of obligations. And we know that's happened, and it's happened significantly. What that tells me is the resources we have, the number of snow plows we have on the street, the number of officers we have on the street, the number of people we have working parks programs, they're being diluted and redirected. When Wild Horse Village comes in, or Phoenix Farms comes in, if I'm going to plow those streets, that's X amount of time I'm not going to spend in Chesterfield Estates. It's just a fact. It's a finite resource. There's only so many hours in the day. It's being diluted. It's happening a little bit at a time, and if you don't believe that the services are being diluted, you're diluted. It's just a fact. So where are we spending money? So now let's look at those expenditures. I graphed out here that the expenses by function. Again, this is the same slide. I'm going to present it in three different time periods. Realize right off the bat that the parks budget reflects roughly $30 million of improvements, not including the land acquisition that we're in process with right now. The debt as a result of the successful ballot in November of 2004, and the police budget includes Clarkson Valley contract, which began in 2017.
Question, sir. I got here, when I got here, it was $9 million for the police, and now it's $11
million. Yes.
But the Clarkson Valley budget, the Clarkson Valley addition, was $400,000 worth of expenditure.
Right.
So is this just raises?
It's actually a little less than $400,000 in expenditures and $400,000 in revenue.
Okay, but I mean, it's a lateral thing pretty much.
Yeah, it's money in, money out. It's basically a wash.
But is this, okay, we've got a $40 million budget, if you will, as it were. 20 of that is labor, 20 million.
Just under that, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so every time the city council gives a 2% raise citywide across the board, it's $400,000 a year. You do it the next year, that's $800,000. You do it the next year, it's $1.2 million you add to your thing. Is that what this is right here? That and then adding the...
It's in there, but in most cases, it's actually less. If you compounded those, it would be higher. Now, the police, I think, we had a year that you don't have raises. We had some that were less than two. But generally, yeah, those numbers are in here, but those aren't necessarily the primary drivers.
What's the driver then?
Well, there's all these
the development,
additional,
services.
But when you saw the headcount,
yes,
we kept the headcount. Actually, we kept it under control. We reduced it in all other areas other than.
I thought I saw the headcount was 113.
In police.
Yes, that's where I am. Oh, for right. your whole staff.
Right, that's a whole police department.
Which is how much? What's your headcount for your whole staff?
For whole staff, 243.
But then, don't you do a lot of part-timers too to make up for that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's full-time equivalents. The parks department has a heavy reliance on part-time staff, several hundred thousand dollars worth. But though that's a whole different category. It's in the expenses, but it's a whole different category.
Yes. Yeah, so
it's included in that labor number, though. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But so saying that you still had a headcount of 248 when you part-time. I'm sorry, when you part-time everybody...
That does not include part-time.
Right, which is kind of misleading if you're really going gangbusters on part-time.
Correct.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, when you look at this graph, what does it tell you? You've got those three major cost centers that we talked about before. Police, their law enforcement is the blue line. Did that potentially? Parks is the green line. Did that potentially? Streets is the blue line. And it's interesting that over that same time period, this goes all the way back to 2007, you know, obviously parks and police are increasing. Everything else is static and holding steady. Now, if you go, you know, you go to a different time period, this is what it looks like from 2010. And remember, 2010 was the depths of the Great Recession. So keep that in perspective. That's why the mayor and I talked about graphing and what period do you select. So I put them all in there. You can draw your own opinions. And then here it is from 2013, which gives you kind of takes out some of the other effects, but it shows you obviously where any growth has happened. There's background growth. This is, you know, when water prices go up, when salt prices go up. Whatever the cost is, you've got labor costs as well, insurance rates, whatever we have to pay for, erasers, you know, what computers, everything, it's inflated, and we've obviously kept our costs below the rate of inflation during that time. So I eliminated all the clutter and only plotted those three. Gives you a little clearer picture. Now I put in, okay, now compare where they are compared to the CPI. And this graph shows those expenses by function as it relates to the CPI if you took 2010 spending levels. And again, remember where we were in 2010. If you take those spending levels and projected them out with the CPI, and there were at least 1 year in there we had negative CPI, you look at the red line, which is everybody but police and parks. We have reduced those expenditures by more than $2 million, or roughly $2 million. But the police department really is kept up with inflation when you include the Clarkson Valley contract and you consider how things have expanded since 2010. I think that's a pretty good outcome. Parks, the same way. Now, this is, realize that 2010, you didn't have the amphitheater open, you didn't have Central Park open. We opened that in June, actually the end of May, 2011. We didn't have Rivers Edge Park. We didn't have the athletic fields. So there's been a lot there, but you notice that you cost went up. And this also includes those concerts that you add that generate revenue as well. So sometimes there's a corresponding revenue that goes with the expense. If we're selling, you know, $100,000 worth of Milky Ways in the concession stand, and it costs us $80,000, that $80,000 cost is going to be in there, but it's offset by $100,000 in revenue. All right, so again, same thing, this just goes from 2014. It's just to be able to take the department by department expenditures and compare them to what the CPI was. Again, you're ignoring all the growth that may have occurred. So what's out there as far as threats? Well, the phone utility taxes are dropping, and they're going to continue to drop. They've already reduced by $1.5 million. Franchise fees, it's only a matter of time. The cable industry is dying fast. Probably most of you have streaming services. And the state legislature is hell-bent on helping a dying buggy whip industry and reducing their franchise fees. And I know we've had this discussion before. It is a franchise fee. The utility companies, when you approve a plat, there are public easements granted and there are public rights of way. And by issuing a franchise agreement, we are giving those utilities the right to use those easements, to use those right-of-ways, so they don't have to go out to you and ask for an easement to put their cable across your property. They have the right to use the public rights-of-way. And in fact, they carry them on their balance sheet at a value in the billions of dollars. So it's dishonest at best for them to say they're not valuable at the same time they're booking them on their books as an asset.
Now you've got $600.
$600,000.
Is that what you mean?
I should have put a K behind it.
Okay.
I will edit that in the version that's distributed.
Okay.
Online sales are huge. We'll talk about that a little bit more. In the late 90s, there was a use tax. We had that. And it was declared unconstitutional, or somehow or another it disappeared. I didn't do the history on it, but I remember it. In 1999, it was like $400,000. A significant amount of money, but you can imagine where we were in 1999 versus where we are now. Operational regulations, you know, as a government, we're a business. We run our operation just like any other business, and there are unfunded mandates that we have to live with. We do road projects, bridge projects. You have training requirements for the police. You've got all sorts of things that you have to do. Just this year with COVID alone, you know, the federal government comes down and says, you know what? We're going to give every employee an additional 2 weeks paid leave. You're mandated to give it to them. Well, that's a cost. It's an expense. It may be the right thing to do, but those are all expenses. So there's a lot of unfunded mandates that change how we do business that cost us money. Growth in all of its forms, it is a threat. E-commerce, we've seen it coming for a long time. Pulled out a couple of articles. E-commerce will make up 22% of global retail sales by 2023. Now what's really interesting about that, in 2019, it was 14%. So not only are you talking about a huge volume of sales, but the pace at which e-commerce is absorbing and taking away sales from brick and mortar is alarming. And that, we don't get a nickel out of the e-commerce because of the Wayfair. And it's a disadvantage to the Main Street businesses that do have to compete in that same environment. Interestingly enough, 2019, you know, you saw earlier, they were predicting 14.9. 2019, penetration was 16%. What's interesting, that was up from 14.9 the prior year. That was a higher growth rate than 2008, the growth rate, not just the increment. The growth rate was highest than it was at, year over year. So it's not only happening, it's happening faster. Now, what is a, what should be a warning to you is now, the pandemic made this much worse. Instead of the rate of growth being what it was naturally, going from 13% to 14.9% to 16%. Second quarter of this year, e-commerce grew 44.4%. Yes, that's a little bit unusual, but I guarantee you now that those folks that weren't consuming online before, the people that hadn't consumed DoorDash and all that stuff before, they are now e-commerce consumers, and it will not rebound to the prior levels. E-commerce penetration hit 20.8% in quarter two. Again, we were at 16% in 2019, 4% jump in quarter two. It's not going to rebound. That's a direct hit to our bottom line.
Pardon me, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Just clarify something real quick. You're online. I don't know anybody who doesn't point and click and buy stuff. You know, everybody does these days. There are some times you get charged sales tax and sometimes you don't. Could you explain that again, what that is? Is it the presence of brick and mortar in the state or in the locale, or what is that?
Under the current legislation, if let's say Amazon, they're a good one. They have a presence in Hayeswood. They've got a new building out in St. Peter's. If you have a physical nexus in the state, you are required to collect that sales tax for the state.
For the state.
So the Amazon makes, you buy Amazon at your house. Mayor bought some shoes earlier this year. He was charged sales tax, online sales tax, and the state got their 4.2%, right?
4.225.
Yeah, 4.225%.
Because Amazon has a physical presence here.
Because they have a physical presence here. We didn't get it. The local municipality didn't get it unless they have a use tax. The difference between the old use tax and the new use tax, some cities like De Pere, I believe, has a use tax right now. So, but what they have is a use tax that says, let me take one step back. There is on the state statutes right now, if you are a consumer and you buy something online or from out of state and you bring it in, let's say St. Luke's buys an x-ray unit, all right? And they ship it in from Chicago. They are required by law to pay sales tax on that the minute their cumulative purchases in the year exceed $2,000. You are required, if you purchase more than $2,000 worth of goods out of state in the year, not at one time, cumulatively, you are required to pay that sales tax. Now, by show of hands, how many people have self-reported?
How many people have what?
Self-reported that.
Zero.
Nobody. It doesn't.
Does he do that?
So legally, that tax already is there. It doesn't.
But it goes to
there's
the state.
There's no enforcement.
It goes to the state, right?
It doesn't go anywhere. No, they're not reporting. If you
$2,000, if you did, it would go to the state.
The state would get their 4.225,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that Sandy? Where
no,
are you?
No, Ryan, I have a doctor's appointment. I'll go first. So the old use tax said if you buy out of state, now if you have it passed in your community, you would get that sales tax when you made the purchase. However, what it doesn't facilitate are third-party market facilitators, which means if you buy something from Etsy through Amazon, they're not covered. Now, if Amazon is the seller and they are selling a product directly to you and you have a use tax, they're obligated to collect that and distribute it to the municipality where the sale occurred. But if they're just acting as a facilitator for a third-party retailer, it doesn't cover it. So that's what the state is trying to do. They're trying to just fix the language on Wayfair so that now that the Supreme Court has revisited that law, they're going to change the language so that it applies uniformly to everybody. It covers the online sellers, out-of-state sellers, and third-party market facilitators. The existing language that has to go on the ballot, because the Secretary of State says you've got to use this language when you go for a use tax, it's very onerous, it's misleading, and last year I think there were 22 municipalities that had it on the ballot and failed in 20 of them, because it sounds like it's something entirely different. This is not a new tax. This is a tax that you used to pay to your brick and mortar that over time has been eroded as the technology has changed. And I buy online, if I can avoid a tax, I do it too. But now you're telling me, you know, people that own brick and mortar stores, it's tough. You know, I can deliver it for, you know, and not pay a sales tax because I can have a drone drop it on your doorstep and avoid all the taxes.
Yeah.
So if I buy from Amazon.
Louder.
If I buy from Amazon and they have a presence in Hazelwood, is that what you just said?
Yes.
Would Hazelwood get the, under another world, would Hazelwood get that tax money?
No.
Just the
same. Because, pardon me? Because the way we collect sales taxes right now is point of sale. If you buy something at Macy's, Macy's is the point of sale. If you point and click from your kitchen table, the point of sale is Chesterfield. Chesterfield doesn't have a use tax. You don't get it. That's where the sale occurred. So it's where the economic transaction happens. Make sense? If you walked into the Amazon warehouse and bought something from there, they'd have to pay sales tax because that's where the economic transaction happens. But when you click on your mouse and you say, put it in my cart, complete the sale, you're sitting at your kitchen table, and that's where the point of sale happened. And so whatever the tax rate is where you made the sale, which is why it's very hard to estimate what, when people ask, well, how much would a use tax generate? I don't know. Because I know how many sales actually occur in the city of Chesterfield by people that buy at Dick's or Target or Macy's or whatever it is. I know that number, but I don't know who orders in their bedroom or whatever. I have to believe that the residents of Chesterfield would represent a higher proportion of online buying than the average, but I don't know that. There's no way for me to.
Why do you think that?
Because we're highly educated, you know, we have a higher than average economic status, and people are more inclined to purchase online using technology than another community that might not be able to do that. So, my conclusions, these are mine, take them, leave them. City of Chesterfield is, and we will continue to grow. We can't stop it. We can't control it. I don't think you want to. Growth requires that services be extended to new residents, businesses, and industry. We have that obligation. The cost of materials, products, and labor will continue to grow. Extending services with existing finite resources necessarily requires efforts be reduced or redirected from current consumers. We can do that. We can manage at any level of service you want to set. We can manage. That's your choice. The regulatory environment and legislative actions have not been favorable to the city. I don't expect that to change. I don't think they've been favorable to the private business either. But my axe is living in the city, and it's constantly getting sharpened by other legislators. The city is, at Chesterfield, we're in a sound financial condition presently. The Chesterfield community is experiencing an erosion of level of service due to growth. All four. We've eliminated a lot of redundancy. We've eliminated spare parts and things where you have backups. They're gone. We've got inflation, regulation, and real, not CPI adjusted, but real revenue loss. I didn't make up these numbers. I printed them out. I have obsessive compulsive problems with numbers. Non-law enforcement general fund expenditures have already been reduced by more than $2 million. Revenues are volatile, they're being reduced, and they're threatened by outside actions. That sounds familiar. We're in a sound position financially. The Chesterfield, well, I've already did that. The city of Chesterfield continues to have an unhealthy reliance on sales tax revenue, 55% of our revenues. And it's being eroded by online sales and taken away for all those other reasons. The current levels of service provided, it's unsustainable. You can't, it's a great bumper sticker to say you do more with less. We've been there, we've done that. Trust me, don't, that's your choice. I'm just telling you I can only do what I can do. In the very near future, the community will be required to make a determination as to how you envision our future. Status quo is unsustainable. You can't stand still. You're going to move forward, you're going to move back. It's your choice. We will need to adjust to the community's direction. I will stand here and tell you today, my personal opinion doesn't matter. I don't care. Tell me we want to contract. Tell me we want to expand. My job is to carry out your direction. But you should be able to see, and I think all these facts are irrefutable. I can't go to the closet and turn on the copier and make more money. And every day, there's something else we add to the list of things we have to do. It's a fact. And our costs are going up. Tom?
Excellent job, first of all.
Oh, my God.
Great data.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
Got a question. So with the dilution of services, give me an example of something that John Q. Public could look at and say, oh, my gosh, you know what? You're right. I noticed a difference. My streets being
followed. Well, here's a great example. Reality is I have less street maintenance workers on the street today than I did in 1996. And I've got 46 miles more street. I tell you that because I grew up in public works. Now, those examples are the same in other places as well. So I have less street maintenance workers. I don't get to that sidewalk as fast. I don't get to sign repair, re-inventory. We've got a very sophisticated system of work order entry and all that. I'm aware of that pothole, and we'll put a number on it, and we'll get to it as soon as we can. But I am not as responsive as we were before. Now, I will tell you, I'll stack up our response with 87 of the other municipalities in St. Louis County. I think we do it right. I think we do it professionally. I think we do it with regular accountability. Just recently, we got that pump out at Central Park. It's a sin that we don't have a pump back in there after the time it's been out. Number one, it's a problem because of COVID. But, those pumps were selected so that you could have a spare pump on the side. Those things fail all the time. You drop one in, you drop it out. We've eliminated that redundancy. You're stretched thin in a lot of places. For right now, this year you guys approved a second code enforcement officer. Haven't hired him because we, put a hiring freeze on non-essential positions. She goes on vacation, you call in about high grass. All right, it's going to wait a while. Just simple. I got one person covering 32 square miles acting on a complaint basis. I'd like to be a lot more aggressive and forward-thinking. I see it because I know where we've been. We're not our services are being diluted in just those ways, in very subtle ways. We used to be able to say that we generated more than 60% of all the work orders in our city. We knew that a pothole was forming before a resident called us and told us. Now, and we'd get it fixed, and we used to get all that. Now, we're damn good, but we have limitations, and it's happening. Everything we're doing, we're perfect. We have a high level of service, but we don't have the level of service we had 5 years ago.
We don't have the money.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, yes, ma'am.
This has been
incredible.
And wonderful. So we're looking at this, understanding that the COVID has impacted some of this in some regard. But my question is, you see eliminating COVID, or let's say it never happened, you see these trends continuing even so?
Nothing in this presentation, after Jeanette finished her presentation, nothing in my presentation was related to COVID in any way. My number stopped at 2019.
Right.
Yeah, COVID is out. That's why we're in a great position. Your financial your financial strategies and your fiscal conservativeness got us in a place that we survived that, and we're going to thrive. I talked to my peers, and some of them were you know, they went through this thing with blinders on, and whatever happens, and we'll consume fund reserves and everything else. We were aggressive up front, took some hits for it. We're going to survive that fine. What I showed you in my presentation is these are long-term trends. It's not going to happen tonight. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But it's coming, and it's coming fast. Yes, sir.
I got a comment and a question and a statement. The comment is
louder.
Yeah, I've got a comment, a question, and a statement. Okay, the comment, first of all, it may not be that, you know, services have been reduced at this point, but it looks like likely they will be, and most assuredly, unless something is done. Question, and maybe this is kind of getting ahead, because I realize a lot of discussion will probably take place, but as far as a potential property tax, one thing I do not know, maybe you do know, if we were to pass, let's say, for instance, on the April ballot, would that become effective next year, or would it be the following year?
I would have thought, and I'm not an expert on that, and I'll have to get back. I would have thought it would have been effective. It's supposed to be the second quarter after it's passed, so I thought it would be next year. But as I understand it, I have been told by a third party that I respect, but not on the record, that if we passed it next year, it wouldn't go into effect until the following year.
That's what I assume, like you, that it would have been effective, not the quarter like the sales taxes are, but because it's a property tax, it would have been effective for this year, but I was talking for next year. But the person I was talking to suggested, because
if we had a property tax and we increased, it would be effective this year, or next, the year you passed it. But since we've never had a property tax, it can only happen in non-assessment.
They don't bill for it anyway. So anyway, that's a question we don't really know. But
you can go on the ballot anytime.
Well, I know. But as far as the effectiveness of right. when it would be. So we don't know that. But here's a statement I would make, that if we were, to pass a property tax, the levy is set, even though you have a ceiling and an authorization, you can set that, you can reduce it. So if all of a sudden we found that we were flooded with sales taxes and we really couldn't justify, asking for a property tax that year, you can set the level down or reduce it or to have zero. So. And we've seen that back when we had the parks property tax, we continually decreased that annually because we didn't need to generate any more revenues to pay the debt that was associated.
And it actually started at 13 cents,
right.
And it was reduced from 13 to 9 to 6 to 3, and we actually paid it off a year early.
Right. So I think there is history to this council that, we operate conservatively and responsibly in consideration of our constituents.
And there's a lot of things. If you decide to go that way, you've got to think about, again, if you decide to go that way, you've got to think about what the vehicle is, property tax, if that's it, or some other vehicle. You've got to think about how much, and is it a standalone decision, or are you tying it to something? And those are all very important decisions that you have to make.
Yes. How much, did you mention in here how much we get from federal grant money?
It varies. We, the public, by department or what? I didn't mention it in here.
The overall, I mean, generally, I mean.
Well, I would tell you that we were real successful. The biggest chunk is usually our street federal money, and we've used that to replace virtually every bridge we've had, with the exception of Wilders, where we did use it to put an overlay on there. We spent the last 4 years unsuccessfully applying because our next priority is Shetland Road. That's an arterial roadway for us. And East-West Gateway has changed a criteria that it hasn't qualified. So we have not gotten a federal street grant. Is it in 4 years, Jim?
Green Trails would be the last one. I think that was 20, constructed in 2017, maybe?
Yeah, and then the last bridge grant we got was Shetland Road.
Same time frame.
So we were averaging about $1.5 million a year, and we got those for all our big streets, but we've not been successful the last couple of years. We get a couple $100,000 here and there. We get, well, the municipal parks one is not federal, but we get a very minimal amount on federal grants.
Search. I got something. This is back to when clearly the path we're on is not sustainable. Let's talk about if this was voted in by if a property tax. And if you talk about $2 billion assessed valuation, all you've got is bragging rights for that, because to us as an institution, it means nothing unless it's taxed, nothing to the institution here, and it services to residents and businesses. But you're saying that the tax would not go into effect until the following year, when it would attach to the property, and then when would the revenues then start flowing in here? Because typically you don't pay your property taxes till the end of the year. So
it would be 2 years.
So even if you passed it in April, the flow wouldn't be for 2 years.
Now that would be for a property tax, and realize you, when you start talking property tax, you have different assessed levels for commercial, different for personal, agricultural, and residential. If you did use tax, that obviously would go right away, but use tax and a loan won't generate enough to get you straight. Okay. It's something you may want to do straight out of fairness.
You have the two choices of contract or expand. There's also stabilize.
No, there's no. Stabilizing is not an option, because we're going to have growth, and you've got inflation. So staying where we are today is outside of our control. We can't do it.
Okay. So then is the way
staying to go... Staying where you are today requires more revenue.
Is the way to go here with this information then is to task the staff with looking for new sources of revenue? Is that where to go now with this?
We can identify that if that's the direction of the council, yes.
I would think we'd have to, we got to do something.
We can give you numbers that we give you a menu from things, you know, for you to consider.
That's like, for instance, we can't charge landing fees at Spirit. And we can't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we're very limited in our options.
We're creatures of the state statutes. We can only do so much. Would it be the thing to do now is to ask the staff, and this is an incredible presentation, very mind-numbing, task the staff with if there is a finding new revenues, if there's a property tax, how much should it be, how much is it, if it's a dime, 15 cents a quarter, what's the residential, what's the commercial, should we just do this, should we just do that? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
ma'am. Come back with a presentation like that, is that where we're going here, is that what we think we ought to do, is to see where new revenues can come from.
It's information. What we do with it is up to you.
And if we chose to put something on a ballot, nobody wants to do this. Nobody wants to be the people that ask for a property. Nobody wants that.
And we would need to get final definition of when it would apply to the revenue. I will tell you, I was somewhat stunned by that response. But
a two-year lag. And then, you know, how much would a property tax on residential or commercial or both mean to this place? If you're taxing $2 billion, that's everything. You know, I don't know. I don't know what it means.
Well, and regardless of what you do, you've all been around a long time, and I would venture to bet there's new information here that you didn't consider or you weren't aware of before.
Oh, of course.
And our task, ultimately, is to trust the residents, but they've got to get the full, to make a decision, they've got to have the full scope of information. And that's a difficult thing to do. So if you decide one way or the other, if you decide, you know what, we're not pursuing anything, staff, prepare a long-term plan for how we're going to adapt to the current revenue stream, we can do that. Our staff, if look at additional revenue sources, we can do that. But long and short, no matter what you do, it's going to involve and require an extensive public education process.
Let me say this about the code enforcement officer and other things. We didn't just slap a code enforcement officer on the payroll, and obviously you have never. But you all came and asked for that.
Mm-hmm.
And we all don't work here. None of us work here. And so we have to rely on your expertise that says this is what we need. And so we reacted to you because we trust you. But I see during COVID you don't need to run out and get a code enforcement officer. You know what I mean? Because if there's a stay-at-home order, people can fix their cars. But do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am.
We react to a lot of times what you bring, but there's also things that we do, and then you say, okay, if you're going to buy the park, we need two more guys to mow lawns, you know, type thing.
And we say all the time, and I mean it most sincerely, my job is to carry out the policy directives of City Council, but it's unfair to you to ask you to create and develop policy if you don't have all the information.
Do we have all the information now, sir, as best as we
can? I think you do.
Without working.
And if there's something else you want, I am more than happy to obsess over a different set of numbers for the next month.
Okay, if we could have that, let's have a presentation and have another committee of the whole that this is what it means, this is what we'll get, this is, you know, of new revenue, whether it's if you've got a combination of a lot of sources of new revenue, I'm assuming the city has gone down that road and founding, I mean, like even Jeanette's thing today, she's going to try to find some money for us. But things like if we have assets that we don't need, like the Holtzman property that the city paid $3.7 million for, why don't we dump it? We don't need that.
Is there a buyer?
Of course not. But why
should we? Jason property's been on sale for 40 years at a lesser price.
Well, you mean it's a successful investor property next door?
Successful investors, Chesterfield Groups next door.
Yes, the one that.
The problem is there's no infrastructure there.
I understand that. That's why this is, it ranks right up there with DORAC. Why'd anybody do anything like that? But would it be good to put it on the market to give it a shot? I know we're doing nothing sitting on it. We still are paying the Monarch levy fees on it, right? Damn thing costs us money, right?
Man, we get a brother-in-law deal on city property.
What did you say?
Loud.
We get what?
We get the brother-in-law deal with the levy district. We got somebody on the levy.
We know a guy.
I don't know what
that
is. You mean Bill Kirchhoff?
The rate we get assessed on municipal property, we pay tax, levy tax on roads. MoDOT pays taxes on their highway. So, yeah, but I will tell you that the benefit we're assessed by the levy district is much less than a property or
levy. Well, I don't want to be assessed anything. I just want the cash, even if it's $2 million after spending four, you know, I don't care.
That's your choice.
Actually, Mary, I had a very end of four.
So, since now we've approved our lobbyists again, Omar, who's going to consolize him. I'd like to know where Wayfair stands.
Where are we with Wayfair? Yeah, is that just dead? The governor, the
guy?
My assumption is it'd be a priority next year. Matter of fact,
a standalone?
The next? You mean the next?
I'd be pleasantly surprised. I guess they could still, but I don't think it's going to happen this year. But one of the things that at least the Ward 4 people probably got was a questionnaire from Senator Schatz, and he was asking people to prioritize the thing, and Wayfair was on his list.
I will tell you this, and the mayor and I talk about it all the time. One of the most frustrating things to me, we are the second largest municipality demographically and physically in St. Louis County. From a legislative advocacy standpoint, we are feckless. We go to St. Louis County and we talk to the county executive and we say, we want this. Yeah, West County doesn't get me elected. We talk to the folks at Jefferson City. I'm telling you, as a city, Jefferson City is a swamp, I'll just tell you that. When we talk about these issues, and I let you know this issue is out there, whatever you believe, if you don't take the initiative to email your representatives and tell them what you say, I guarantee you, you have as much authority. It frustrates me that we're the economic engine of St. Louis County. I've shared with you all the amount of money that's generated to the county and to the state by the city of Chesterfield. And it's huge. The amount of money we send to the zoo is huge.
And the school district.
And they ignore us. We have no political authority whatsoever. So, when you start talking about Jeff Brooks and to think that, well, Chesterfield says they want this, you have to take an active role in it.
That's what I'm saying. We're from 40,000 miles away.
Well,
to the swamp, in my opinion,
it takes both.
So,
nobody around this table understands how it works there.
When we get an email here from a resident, the whole building turns upside down. Our culture here is very resident-driven. We want our people to be happy. For instance, you said, okay, well, we here continue to do the streets. We did Shetler twice because we aim to please here. We do. And that's our culture. Do you know what I mean? So... are you saying that Jefferson City reacts the same way?
I'm telling you, with all due respect to the two former council members who are elected state, I talk to them, and they always ask, what can I do for you, Mike? How can we help the city of Chesterfield? But I will tell you this. The people that control things are the leadership, unless you get to the floor leader, the party leader.
Our guys are
nothing happens unless you get by the gate.
That's right. Mike's got something.
Yeah, I was going to say, in terms of next steps from this meeting, first of all, excellent information.
Oh, my goodness.
In terms of next steps from this meeting, at the risk of taxing the staff, there may be two approaches to take. One would be to pursue, begin looking at in earnest about a property tax and all the different scenarios and things like that.
Yeah.
Because the clock is ticking.
Yes.
It will soon be October the 1st. We'll be in holiday and to get something on the ballot. We may want to start doing some homework now.
I think so.
To understand what the implications of that would be. I'm not recommending it, just saying what the implications of that would be.
Yeah.
The second action should be, let's assume we don't pursue a property tax, then what is the sustainability platform or program for the city moving forward? If revenues are not going to be increasing and are going to continue to trickle down as they are, our expenses, while not increasing dramatically, they will continue to trickle up. What does that mean for the city, and what kind of scenario should be run if we're not going to pursue some sort of revenue enhancement?
That's interesting you say. We have just lived through and are living through what happens when you cut services, for instance, in parks. There we have it. We have it right now, no pool and no amphitheater. No, there it is. We're living it now.
That was the best tax euphemism I've heard in a long time, but I'm doing that.
Well, we've got expense enhancement, so we've got to do something. What
is your question about revenue?
So, well, I'm just going to say, well, go ahead.
Well, just I think.
So, do you want a motion for that? Or?
You know, I don't. Let's see what do you have to add to.
Well, I don't want to interrupt, but I know they've already voted, so it doesn't matter. But in all honesty, I would rather have Jeff Brooks representing and working for us than five legislators in my hip pocket. So, because. And you may wonder why would I say such a thing? And that is because, in spite of our two legislators that happen to be from here, even if they were somebody different, it wouldn't matter. Jeff Brooks has the influence over so many other legislatures, senators, and representatives in Jefferson City than just the couple that we have over here. So
the leadership sets the schedule.
There's four
people up there that run the show.
Yeah, typically in this presentation, Mike, you put the top revenue producers. I didn't see that. And if we talk pre-COVID, did you say Lights Come in this presentation that Tom Thought was our biggest revenue producer?
No. I can give you who the revenue producers are. I can't give you the numbers.
I could swear Tom Thought had taken the top spot at one point, but there was... When the economy was
I will tell you, I get those numbers.
It's always Sam's and Walmart.
We can tell you who the top revenue producers are and those sorts of things. But the revenues are proprietary and I can't share that.
Why are they proprietary?
You can't share their revenue numbers.
I can give you a rank,
but I can't tell you.
You know what's incredible is that little Chick-fil-A, they do a phenomenal job, and they were always
on the list.
And they were always on the list, and they're closed on Sundays, and they don't have a liquor license.
And the average sale is what, $10 or less?
Yeah, it's incredible.
Andy Gunn's is number one. You try to get something in there for $10.
Yeah.
The Cheesecake Factory is number two.
It's incredible.
Chick-fil-A with their double drive-through,
yes.
5-6 days a week.
Yes.
Number three.
You're talking just restaurants.
Yeah, that's restaurants.
Okay.
But we have total sales tax producers too.
Okay.
We get that list.
You can share that with us.
I can, but not the numbers. Just the ranking.
But the ranking.
Oh yeah,
ranking.
Yeah. Yes. You can share that. That would be great, please.
Okay. So can we say that there a consensus here to come back again with a sort of where's our new revenue coming from, if any? Here's your choices, city council. Here's what we can contract. Here's what no services look like, although we're clearly living it, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, can we, is that our next step? Do you want a motion that says that?
That's a question. You want me to make a motion?
Or do you just, as consensus, I think that's where
No,
you got to react to this somehow.
Asking staff to generate product, I'd like to have a motion.
Can I make a motion that we direct staff to, number one, explore alternative sources of revenue besides sales tax, and further to that portion of it, to look at specifically a property tax on both residential and commercial, and come back with some different scenarios for that.
But separate them. This was residential, this is not one
big one. You don't have to have the same rate if that's the case.
But I mean, separate them, because who knows if we'll want to do residential too.
Okay. And then I was going to add to that, and I don't know if this is the second motion, or add to that alternate scenario, which is assume status quo in terms of revenue or slightly declining revenues, assume slightly expanded expenses, and what scenarios should we be exploring for the city to provide services?
If we do nothing?
If we do nothing.
Okay.
If we don't pursue additional revenue.
I'll second that.
Yeah, I will say, just it's critically important that while we're doing this, we separate that from the budget process.
Oh, I think so.
Those are two separate things.
Yeah, and don't put this in the budget. Don't spend this money.
This is actually, to me, it's outside of the budget process.
No, I'd like another committee of the whole, the finance committee of the whole meeting, that's a separate whole thing. What you got?
Either a suggestion or a question. Okay, so if council's going to ask, or the committee's going to ask the staff to do this work and bring that back to it. Should you, or do you, I'll ask Mike or whatever, either question or suggestion, include not just property taxes, but maybe look at increasing the rate on the utility taxes. Include adding the local tax that we do not have.
What, say that, what do you mean?
There's other taxes out there that are available to municipalities. Many municipalities have it. One is, it's called a quarter cent local tax that we keep most of it. But if we can't, you know.
Well, what kind of tax is it, though?
It's a sales tax.
It's a sales, so it would go in.
We'll look at it comprehensively.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I would want this, but if you look at it comprehensive,
yeah,
you want to consider
all the
alternatives. And then somebody suggested something to me the other day, and I have no idea. I think it's probably not a good idea. It probably isn't even possible. But they mentioned an entertainment tax. So I'm guessing that's probably not a possibility. But if you really want to open the book and say what all is out there as far as alternatives.
Yeah, there's also an economic development tax.
Well, yeah, that too.
The problem with that is you've got to create an economic development board.
Right.
And quite frankly, those are ripe for corruption.
I was trying to state it broadly like that. So look at alternative sources of revenue besides sales tax.
Comprehensive. Let's say that is the motion rather than making it a
with
big
the scale down, then, is the alternative plan laid out too?
Yes.
Nothing.
If we do nothing. What you got, Tom?
The sales tax, are we maxed out on that? Are we charging the max sales tax? Do we have discretion?
We're maxed, yeah. There's certain authorizations. There is the quarter cent local option we could pass, but the half cent for capital is maxed out. The 1 cent for parks, or half cent for parks is maxed out, and then the 1 cent pool. So though it's not like you can increase those, but there is another sales tax option.
What is that again?
It's a quarter cent local option sales tax.
Quarter cent local option.
Yeah, and I'd have to look what it's offering.
And that's the only discretion we have.
I believe that's true. There may be more, but not that I'm aware of.
The 1 cent pool tax, we have no discretion. That's set by the county and just distributed.
That's the one that the Supreme Court decided.
They said that's not even our
change. One
we're not the one
laws.
Putting that tax. They treat it basically like a county tax and then hand it
just like property.
Right?
Correct. That's right.
Madam Chair, can you restate the motion, please?
It is to have a comprehensive report, a report from the passing staff with a comprehensive report and information on what to do next about increasing the revenues of the city, whatever it looks like, and what it looks like if we do nothing.
With the current revenues.
Yes. Yes, we do. He said he wants a motion if he wants to be tagged.
I need some specificity. When we start talking about the consensus, my interpretation of what you're conceding to.
Okay, but try to interpret that as broadly, you know, if it's better to do the quarter cent, if it's better to do this, if it gives all the information. This is enough to choke a horse and make you sick.
Yes,
and God love you for doing this. It's really, I really learned a lot here today. I really did. But you wanted a motion, and so that's kind of it. It's been moved and seconded. Are we talked out here?
And given where we are on the calendar, we might want to have some priority put to this.
Okay, and so when do we want to come back? When do you think, do you have any idea when you could prepare such a thing?
I don't. When you start talking about the calendar, November's out of the question anyway. We're talking April. Before you have to.
Oh, no, I understand that. I'm talking April ballot. But
oh, yeah.
Okay,
but I'm saying, given where we are, that it's for all intents and purposes, first of October, you know, we'll want
to
have something.
Something has to be ready in January, something or other. Like, if Vicki takes everything down when council files for office, it has to go with that. So it has to be done in mid January?
Yeah, I believe that's the case. Yeah, we will get you your report. As expeditiously as
possible.
Because
we have to process it and make decisions and talk it through. This is a big deal. We do not want to be, believe me, there isn't anybody on this council that wants to go down this road. This is toxic. However, it you wonder, we're going to find out if the people of Chesterfield will support. This is just to support and maintain the level of services that we have, which they expand and grow on their own anyway.
It's also going to, you know, one of the things you've got to be aware of, we are on the cusp of two very large commercial developments. And whatever you decide to do, if you decide to do anything, you need to be aware that whatever you're doing takes full advantage of those developments.
And look to, can we charge, there's the TGA fees that the county gets. Can we charge stuff like that? Just go down every avenue and let's turn over the sofa cushions. Where else is there revenue that we're not getting? You know what I mean? That we should talk about. And I think that that's our motion, Mike. So are we ready to call the question and vote? Okay. All in favor of this and tasking the staff with this? This is the committee of the whole, so everybody can vote, signify by saying aye and raising your hands.
Aye.
That is aye. Tom Petriano.
I'm going to vote no.
Because why? You want to write your own check and pay for this stuff?
No. Now, wait a minute, Madam Chair. That's unfair, that statement. Now, procedurally, I'm not. It just doesn't. You know,
he just said that's what he wants.
I understand that's what he wants.
You just don't want to be on the record having your fingerprints on this.
I'm just don't worry about me. You guys, Steve Old Maid is fine. Don't worry about this.
Is there any names besides?
Don't hate the center, okay?
Doubting Thomas.
So today,
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, that's the last time
on
our agenda.
You don't even want to look at it, buddy.
Thank you for your very valuable time.
You'll be looking at it, not with your fingerprint on it.
This is
gotta have some political courage here, pal.
Trust me, it took more courage than the other side of us.
Oh, you know, we can downsize the not put these services and more.
Terrible information.
I like starting at 4 o'clock. You're ready to answer.